Exposing free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Wednesday the 14th of July, year of our Lord 2020, day 487 of America Held Hostage. Today we're going to talk about a major victory in terms of parental rights, as we've had a Tennessee official fired for trying to go behind the backs of parents to get their children vaccinated. We'll talk about the fallout of that. And we'll also be joined in the third hour with Simon Roche from South Africa and Suidlanders.org. I've talked to him before about the plight of white farmers in South Africa. We'll get an update as to what is happening on the ground in that country being run by Marxists. Stay with us. Today we'll begin with the end of the Afghan war. In Afghanistan, you've had the top U.S. general stepping down in a symbolic end to America's longest war. That's the headline. It is an ignominious end of something that we had never should have never started, something that could have been ended by any of the subsequent presidents, should never have been started by George W. Bush. He declared a victory and a mission accomplished. Could have been ended by Obama, could have been ended by Trump. And by the way, it is not being ended by Biden. He doesn't get any credit for that. This is collapsing out of their control. Believe me, if they thought they could control this, they would stay there forever. That was always the intention. The Pentagon had said, we will be there for another 20 years. And they would say, as Trump would say, we're going to leave. He said, they'd say, no, you're not. Pompeo. Did say, yeah, he says these things. And then we set him down and we talked to him and explained to him how this is, right? You know who's running the country. It's not these puppets in the Oval Office. But will we ever learn? This is where empires go to die. Ours is no exception. Ours is not to reason why, though. Ours is but to go to Afghanistan and die as an empire. We should never ask how we got here in the first place. But some of the people who are veterans are asking that question. And as this is happening, Biden is still trying to put a winning face on all of this. This Saigon moment he doesn't want hung on his legacy, but it's there nevertheless. Highly unlikely, he said Biden, that there's going to be Taliban overrunning everything and owning the whole country. Well, it's already happening as he's saying this. And they already do essentially own the whole country outside of one or two large cities. It's more than 85% of the country. Last year it was 60%, and you had Rand Paul saying and echoing what many people were saying. And what was the truth? That there was no military solution to this. So this is not Biden is not saying, this is done, we shouldn't be here, we're not going to win. No, no, we're going to win, we're still going to win, as everything is collapsing around him. Taliban surge in North Afghanistan sends thousands fleeing, and an Afghan vet asks, what have we ended up with at the end of all of this? This particular vet, whose name is Andrew Brennan, 36, the story from AP began by saying, images of the World Trade Center towers collapsing in New York were still fresh in the minds of the first American troops who arrived in Afghanistan as the U.S. began the war in 2001. You know what was not ingrained in their mind because of the media was the idea that three buildings could steal skyscrapers. As President Trump said, very strong buildings. You know, he built his out of concrete, but these people actually built them out of steel. that three of these buildings could collapse in their footprint in just a very short time after being hit by only two planes. Only two of the buildings were even hit by a plane. And they just collapsed into their own footprint. Yeah, the third building, the guy who owned it, Silverstein said, pull it. Had that on tape. Pull it. That's what they say when they do controlled demolitions, which is what this looked like. President Trump knew from day one that that was what it was. He even said that as he was, yeah, it looked like a controlled demolition. Yeah, it certainly does. Take a look at the controlled demolitions. You can easily watch a whole bunch of them on YouTube and see if you think it looks like a controlled demolition or an uncontrolled collapse. So he knew that from day one. Rudy Giuliani sent a lot of people to die slowly by not wearing masks to cover up any evidence of what had happened there. He sent them into that area, had them breathing the dust. People are still dying from that. For Andrew Brennan, 36, it's the days, the painful memories inside that bother him. A former Army captain who flew combat missions, Brennan lost one of his closest friends, pilot Brian Nichols, when his Chinook helicopter was shot down in 2011, 10 years after it began, about the midpoint, killing 30 Americans, 7 Afghan soldiers, and 1 interpreter, the single deadliest day for U.S. troops during the war. While he honors those who sacrificed their lives, he believes that it was a senseless war. What have we ended up with at the end of it? Other than trillions spent, 7,000-plus Americans dead, and more than 2 broken generations of warriors, he wrote. The only group that learned anything through this entire period were the politicians, and they learned that the American population is so removed from their modern-day legions, mercenaries, if you will, that they can do nothing with our nation's all-volunteer, that they can do anything, rather, politicians can do anything with our nation's all-volunteer military, and no one will pay attention or care enough to change it. That's right. Because it's volunteer, because it's a career, they can get away with these types of things, and because you know, when they're drafting people and pulling people out of society, and it's somebody that is a friend or a family member that is yanked out and goes there, but these people are looking at it and say, well, you know, they signed up for this, and it's a job, and that's a big problem. It's also a big problem that we don't have a debate about wars. As I said before, ours is not to reason why. Ours is but to do or die, right? That's the poem that was talking about the charge of the Light Brigade. And that also happened in Afghanistan, Lord Cardigan. One thing that, about the only positive thing that came out of that was a Cardigan sweater. He became a celebrity because of that poem. The thin red line and all the rest of it. But it was like our entire Afghanistan war. The charge of the Light Brigade was a boneheaded move by somebody, a upper-class elitist, Lord Cardigan, who had absolutely no clue as to what he was doing. And that is exactly how we got into this Afghanistan war. And, of course, the people were very excited about the poem and the hero that was manufactured out of it. But we don't look at the loss of life. We don't look at the loss of wars either. We never learn anything from these asymmetric wars, that we're never going to win these things. And we should have Augustine laid it out pretty clearly. It's pretty good. Go back and look at his just war theory. He did back then. He lived around 300 A.D., you don't go to a war unless you are clearly attacked. And that was not the case with 9/11. A lot of people believe that that was the case. But you also have clearly defined objectives. What does it mean to win? And when the hostilities have ceased, then you cease. You don't do this stuff about permanent occupation, nation building, which is just staying there to collect the minerals. That's really what that was about. Speaking of warmongers, Nikki Haley, perhaps the worst warmonger of any political party, has now been given a private luncheon by Jared Kushner's father. His father, the guy that was rightfully in prison and was pardoned by Trump. Remember, it was Charlie Kushner, Jared's father. I'll give you a little background on what he did to deserve prison. This is a guy who embezzled money out of his family business, and when his sister discovered it and called him on it, he decided that he would blackmail her and her husband. He hired a prostitute, tried to set up a honey trap and record it. That failed. And so they got him on a number of charges. It's one of the reasons why Chris Christie didn't have a position in the Trump administration, because Jared Kushner hated him, because Chris Christie came after his criminal father. And so this criminal, who is capable of stealing from his family and then trying to set them up out of revenge and to do blackmail, pardoned by Donald Trump, just had 20 friends at his beach house on the Jersey Shore. He's still very rich. Jared's father, Charles Kushner, predicted that Nikki Haley would be the first woman president. Some attendees made donations to her Stand for America Political Action Committee. She said, and of course she's made no secret of her 2024 ambitions during a speech in New Jersey on Sunday night. She said she has, quote, a big decision to make at the beginning of 23. Jared and Ivanka were in Aspen over the weekend. Perhaps they went to the Sun Valley thing, I don't know, and then stopped by Aspen for some skiing. They did not attend Kushner's lunch, his father's lunch, but last month they visited Haley and her husband, Michael Haley, at the Kiowa Island Beach Club in South Carolina. It is a mutual admiration society. Haley was considered to be a close ally of Jared. She famously called him a hidden genius. She said, "I can't say enough things about Jared and Ivanka," said Nikki Haley in October 2018. "Jared is such a hidden genius that no one understands." Yeah, he's got a lot that he's hiding, quite frankly. And he is a criminal genius. And so is Nikki Haley. And I say that she is a warmonger extraordinaire because she tried to lie us into putting troops on the ground in Syria, along with Theresa May, based on the false Skripal poisoning narrative. Oh, look at this. You know, the Russians attacked him with Novichok, and he survived. A guy who had been a triple agent, and he'd been living in England for about a decade. And I've talked about that many times. I'm not going to go into it again. We have Simon Roche is going to be joining us in the third hour, and we'll be getting an update as to what is going on in South Africa, the violence there as it is escalating, and, of course, the looting. And it's not just the looting that is happening by the individuals who say they're so distressed about Jacob Zuma. I've talked to Simon Roche in the past, and, of course, Jacob Zuma was the politician in power when they were chanting at their political rallies, the ANC, "Death to the white man, death to the Boer," right? It's just nothing personal, he said. We're not actually racists. We're not trying to commit genocide. And we're not trying to loot the country. Well, they've already done it, as I pointed out the other day, with minerals. They already looted the country of mineral resources, took over the mines. They want to take over the farms. They are pushing people to attack the farmers, hoping the farmers will just leave. If they don't, they'll just take it over. And as one individual pointed out, well, if this law that they put through is passed, the proposed law is passed, it'll allow them to confiscate anything they wish, not just mines and farms, but bank accounts and insurance and health accounts. So we're going to talk to him about what is going on in that country. But it's not just in South Africa where the Marxists are attacking farmers. It's also happening here in America with the USDA. This headline from VaccineImpact.com, USDA attacks Amish farmers. Why? Because they're selling real food. It's not corporate food. They have a very successful business model. And they are selling food. It is a kind of a buyer's club. And they don't like that. They want to make sure that everybody is getting their GMO foods. As a matter of fact, this is typical of what you usually hear, right, about farms. 98% of U.S. farms are operated by families. 86% of all U.S. agricultural products are produced on family farms or ranches. In 2018, about $140 billion worth of agricultural products were exported to the world. Well, that's not really true, because a lot of these farms that they're calling family farms are, as they point out in Vaccine Impact, just a handful of corporate billionaires. The real family farms, like this Amish farm, are under attack from the U.S. government. The other ones get subsidies. They get all kinds of subsidies. And they are giant mega businesses. They happen to have family members who are the key stockholders. You know, kind of like you got a lot of Walmart family members. You know, the Walton family members are stockholders. Is that a family business? Is Bill Gates the biggest landowner? Is the Gates Foundation? That's a family business. Is Bill and Melinda? Oh, wait, their family is breaking up. The interesting source of information here is USDA. And on this graph, scroll down and show that graph, Travis. The U.S. food expenditures share of disposable income from 1929 to 2010. And in 1930, Americans are spending 24%, that's it, 24% of their income on food. I remember listening to old-time radio with the kids. We would do that sometimes when we're driving, because it was a lot cleaner than what you typically get on any other stuff. And there was, I forget which radio show it was, but it was back in the 40s, and it all revolved around a turkey. This turkey was a big deal. The turkey was very, very expensive for the family. You remember in the 1930s, the promise of FDR was a chicken in every pot. We get chickens with every meal if we want. So that type of the food dropping is a function of a couple of different things. The dropping in price, it's a function of subsidies, and it's a function of corporate mass farming. Now, the downside of all that is that comes packaged with all kinds of preservatives and steroids and everything else that comes along with a factory farm. People who do not want to eat like that, who want to eat cleaner, are looking for a different way to do this. And I think that it's going to become, if they go through these vaccine mandates, and you see this happening in France now, if they go through with the vaccine mandates, if they do make life difficult or impossible for people who refuse to get the vaccine, then it's not just going to be about eating clean food. It's going to be about that type of independence. And that's really where we're going to need these family farms. That's why I'm spending the time talking about this. There is one other thing that he mentions in this article on Vaccine Impact. He says, when we invaded Iraq in the 1990s, one of the first things we did was to take over their agricultural system by replacing their locally produced food with GMO crops dependent upon U.S. seed companies like Monsanto. And how does that work? He doesn't unpack that for you. I'm sure he's talked about this before. But the way that works, and it's been a big problem for farmers, local farmers in India, committing suicide en masse. Because if they go in and buy the Monsanto seed, it's genetically modified so that it is not killed by glyphosates, by Roundup. That's the trade name for Monsanto. They've now been bought by Bayer. But they genetically engineered seeds that would be resistant to this pesticide. And so then you can buy their seeds, and you can saturate the ground with glyphosates, and nothing else will grow. No weeds or anything like that. It'll just be that, it'll come up, and it'll be nothing but your corn or whatever it is that you, GMO seeds that you bought. The problem is that these GMO seeds have also been designed by Monsanto so the farmers cannot make seeds for the next season from them. Every season they will have to buy that from Monsanto. And if they choose not to, they won't be able to grow anything else because their ground is poisoned for anything other than Monsanto's GMO seeds. This has been a big problem for organic farmers in the U.S. because they have spray overdrift. As a matter of fact, they came up with another variation of glyphosate called Dicamba. And that is very susceptible to drifting onto neighboring property. They call it Dicamba drift. And so farmers in areas that wanted to have organic food were upset about that. And they made sure they banned the use of these pesticides and these GMO products in their area. So even though they were spending massive amounts of money in one small local election. You had Monsanto spend $8 million lobbying the public. They still lost the measure because the public knew what was going on. The public was the local farmers there. And so as a result, they decided that since they were losing everywhere, no matter how much money they spent at the local level, what they would do is go to Washington. Because, you know, when you're losing locally, you go to Washington. Because we don't want to have, they said, a patchwork of regulations across the United States. And they can go to Washington and they can buy off a strategic number of senators and congressmen, and they can impose a centralized problem from Washington. That's why I say Washington is the problem. It is not the solution. The solution is local. And even if you have something like that, we called it the Dark Act because they kind of did it in the dark. But even if something like that is passed, then we need to start to understand that we have the Constitution on our side. The Ninth and Tenth Amendments say that we did not give powers to the federal government to prohibit us from banning pesticides that are going to poison organic food. And so that is the bottom line. We need always, you know, whenever you start to solve problems at the local level, they will always go to Washington to counter you. Understand that. And so it's vital that you understand the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, that you not be suckered in to this Washington uber alles or the judicial supremacy, because that's ultimately where it ends up. Do not sue to get your rights. Use the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. Defy them, and they will back down. If you are serious about that and you have the law on your side, they'll back down in the same way that Jeff Sessions did over medical marijuana that he hated because he had no authority and he didn't want to expose that. Because once, and that's our big weapon, right? They can use this idea that they can dictate to us out of Washington. If they lose that in a court fight, if we actually appeal on those grounds, and if we wake the people up to the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, most of what the federal government does would disappear. So they are very scared to have a challenge on those bases. That's why Sessions would back down. So as he points out on Vaccine Impact, he said they sell food on their online store. They get it from Amish communities because it's local co-op food or buyer's club. And he said, just because these operations produce food from a small-scale producers, mostly families, it doesn't mean the operation cannot be scaled up. Most certainly can. It'd be a good thing if it is scaled up, isn't it? Isn't that the dream for people to be able to do that? I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem with giant farms as long as they don't push other people out of business by using the government to regulate other people out of business. These operations are under constant attack, however, by regulatory government agencies. The entire nation got a real dose of reality when the COVID-19 pandemic hit last year. And meat operations that were dependent on processing plants that require USDA certification to sell their food became a bottleneck that choked the nation's food supply. Remember, a couple of positive tests, not even anybody sick, and they shut down the entire meat processing plant or chicken processing or pork processing plant. And then you started having these shortages. Many of the small-scale operations that do not sell to retail chains, but only to members of their private food clubs. This is a way that we get around the federal intrusion. We say, well, it's a private club. You know, we go in and we buy a share of this cow. I own part of it, and this other person owns part of it. It's our own personal cow. And when the thing is slaughtered, we all get a certain percentage of it that we've agreed. So we're all investing in a cow, that type of thing. And there's a farmer, Amish farmer, Amos Miller, operates food clubs in the Northeast. He's been a frequent target of the industrial food complex. And in particular, this article had a lot of issues with a trade publication of Big Agra called the Food Safety News. They now have him in the docks in a trial, and they're trying to hit him with fines and expenses exceeding $260,000. And the way Food Safety News put it, they said if the farmer doesn't quickly pay $250,000 contempt fine, jail could become an option. So what has he done to make this publication, Food Safety News, this trade publication, this Big Agra publication, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which is their handmaid, just like the FDA is a handmaid of big pharmaceutical companies. What has he done? Well, Miller seems to be making profit from the huge demand for his high-quality, unadulterated food. It's an organic farm, and it's a small-scale operation. But Food Safety News said, the farming operation that Miller runs from Bird in Hand, Pennsylvania, is shown to be, quote, significant and interstate, with interstate sales of meat, poultry, and other food products. In addition, he owns an adjoining farm that he purchased for $1.5 million September 2020 during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. He testified that he financed $1.4 million of the purchase price. So, there you go. Put down $50,000 and he financed $1.4 million. That's a crime. According to the Marxists that are coming after the farmers in our country who want to put out clean food because they're competition to the people who are really calling the shots in Washington. As he points out, who does Amos Miller think he is, earning serious money from his farming, then reinvesting most of it in additional farmland and expanded facilities? What is he, some sort of a welfare queen? They went on to say on the Food Safety News, it's up to federal judge Edward G. Smith of the Eastern District of Pennsylvania to decide if Miller is going to get away with negotiating with the government over the sanctions. Yeah, he shouldn't be able to get away. The only people who should be able to negotiate with the government over sanctions are people like big pharmaceutical companies like Johnson & Johnson, who could create one of the worst drug epidemics the world has ever seen with the opioid epidemic, the worst thing we've seen in terms of drug addiction. They were able to get away with it. They were able to negotiate a settlement that was basically nothing. And yet, El Chapo, poor fellow. I don't have any sympathy for El Chapo and the Sinaloa drug cartel or HSBC, who gave him his own private cash window to launder money. They gave HSBC a slap on the wrist. They gave Johnson & Johnson a slap on the wrist. But poor El Chapo, we should call him El Chumpo, I guess. He had everything taken from him under civil asset forfeiture before they even found him guilty. And yeah, he is guilty of sin. But this is just the way that it works. Only certain people are able to avoid prosecution. Finally, he says the USDA and the Food Safety News appear to have lost sight of the fact this case is part of a long-running federal campaign to obliterate the notion of private food rights. So you and I should not be allowed to decide if we want to drink raw milk or if we want to have grass-fed beef that we own part of it and we have the farmer slaughter it on site. We shouldn't be able to make those kinds of decisions. It's exactly the same principle behind medical marijuana, for example. And I've said for the longest time, whether you're talking about natural organic food or whether you're talking about medicine, and it could be and it will be, any vitamin supplements, that'll also be on the table. If you can't decide what you want to eat, if you've got to have the Food and Drug Administration give you approval, even for something like ivermectin or HCQ, which has been used for decades, they know its profile, they know that it's safe, and yet it's not specifically approved for the novel coronavirus, therefore it's not approved. Everything is prohibited unless expressly permitted. And it has to be expressly permitted by the Food and Drug Administration for a particular condition. Well, that's not allowed. And they're also going to tell you what food you can eat. And if they tell you what food and medicine you can have, what you can put into your body, they will tell you, as I've said for the longest time, what you must put into your body. And that's where we are today, isn't it? I honestly wasn't sure that I would see that in my lifetime. And I still look at the daily news and I'm just amazed that they're getting away with this, that they're moving slowly but inexorably to vaccine mandates, to mandate what we put into our body. But it all begins in terms of principle. It all begins with the FDA or even the DEA telling you what you can and cannot put into your body if you choose to do it. You may be making poor choices, but that's none of their business. A good example of where we are in terms of the loss of due process and the weapons that are being used to control us is this story out of the UK. A radio host there, Mike Graham, and a background story on this for those of you who don't follow soccer or, as I say, in the rest of the world, football. Football is soccer in the rest of the world because they actually play it with their feet. It makes a lot of sense. But we have a different term. Anyway, we had the World Cup of football, soccer. And there was a lot of anger about the fact that that England lost in the final game to Italy. And people started making comments because some of the final shots that were missed were made by black players. And so people started making racist remarks. Now, a lot of people said, most of those remarks, if you look on Twitter, they're coming from people who are living in other countries. They're living in the Middle East or in Asia, things like that. Nevertheless, whoever made them, the response by a radio host there, Mike Graham, he got angry about these racist response. And he's called for the, quote, racist to be stripped of their bank accounts, of their passports, of anything to live their life. That's right. He says, so forget about locking them up. Forget about throwing away the key. Forget about banning them from football stadiums. I got a better idea. Instead, let's make it impossible for them to actually have a life. Does this sound familiar? Does this sound like what they want to do to the unvaxxed that they hate so much? See, it doesn't matter. You don't have to be a real racist. They just have to accuse you of being a racist. There is no due process anymore, right? And even if there was a law, you still need to have due process. I don't know that there is, I guess there is in the UK, a law against racism. But if there is a law, there needs to be a due process, there needs to be a presumption of innocence, there needs to be a trial by your peers, and on and on. But we don't pay any attention to that anymore. As a matter of fact, this guy himself has been accused of being a racist in the past. Anybody can be accused of being a racist. And if you don't have to prove it, then you can just go after your political enemies. You understand, this is just like what you've seen described in Charles Dickens' Tale of Two Cities. It's going back to the beginnings of socialism and the beginnings of the Reign of Terror that you had going along with the French Revolution, the Jacobins, just pointing at your enemies and taking them out. And what happens is that finger eventually comes back and points at you. That's what happened to Robespierre. He eventually went to the guillotine himself after taking out so many of his enemies. Kind of like this guy. So I guess that's why he decided he would finger other people. So if we don't like somebody, we don't have to find them guilty, give them due process of violating any law. We just destroy their life. No bank account, no ability to travel, he said, no passport, no benefits, nothing. And that's what they are going to do to people that they don't like in terms of vaccines. Janet Yellen, a former Federal Reserve flunky, who is now the U.S. Treasury Secretary under Biden, has also talked about taking people's bank accounts, industries' bank accounts. We've got to stop the fossil fuel funding. So let's ban anything that has to do with fossil fuels. Let's ban any funding of that. We'll just purge them out of the banking system so that they can't do business. And we've seen this before in the Obama administration. Operation Choke Point focused on gun retailers and gun manufacturers. We're going to not allow them to use bank accounts. So we're going to call you racist and you can't use the bank accounts. We're going to say that, you know, you're selling guns. We don't like guns. So we're going to shut down that entire industry by shutting you down using the central banking industry. And we're going to do the same thing now to fossil fuels. We're going to shut down the oil business. Now that's going to shut down our lives. And how are they doing it? Through the banking system. Why is all this stuff being done? As Catherine Austin Fitz point out, this is all engineered by the banks. They ramped us up into this massive debt situation. They're going to take everything from everybody, just as Thomas Jefferson said. He said, if we ever get a central bank, we will wind up as slaves on the continent our forefathers conquered. And that's what's happening. But it's happening globally, not just on this continent, on every continent. And that is the plan, to make sure that political dissidents, people whose commentary they don't like, are banned out of the banking system as well. It's starting slowly right now with things like bans out of PayPal, banned out of Venmo, this small program. believe me, this is going to continue to run. If we don't have a system of laws, if we don't have a system of due process, if we just start going on a campaign of terrorizing anybody that is our political enemy or that we disagree with, this is what this is going to look like, and this is where these people are headed. And it's coming in with a vaccine, and they have to do it to protect society. Because if they don't do this, then we're all going to die. That's the justification they have for this. We have Marxist Pete Buttigieg, who I like to call Booty Marx, because he's open about being gay. That's his superpower politically. But he doesn't want people to know his deep Marxist background. He is now also talking about climate change, along with Janet Yellen. This is the pandemic was just the beginning of it. It was the shock. It was to establish precedents of control. Now they can say we're all going to die because of climate change. Nobody believed that. But everybody did believe that we were going to die last year, pretty much everybody, because of the pandemic. Enough of the people did, anyway. And so they were able to put in these climate change measures. And now they're going to come back after they've established the precedent of being able to use these measures. If they say that people are going to die, if the experts say that you're going to die, it doesn't matter if it's true. You can't question the experts. You can't see the data. Again, 15 years ago, it's involved in trying to show us the data. Show us the data for your climate change. You're changing everything about our life. I'd like to see the data. You see the same thing today. No, no, no. We can't audit the Fed. We can't audit the WHO or the CDC. We're not going to be able to audit the Weather Bureau. We're not going to be able to do anything with this stuff. And so Buttigieg, who is now there with infrastructure, says the infrastructure plan will stop climate change. Why? Because it will stop everything we're doing. They're going to ban not just cars. They will ban the fuel. These people are not stupid. They're going to ban or make it difficult for you to buy ammunition rather than banning the gun. They're going to make it impossible, too expensive for anybody but the billionaires and the elites to be able to afford fuel. It'll become so rare. And that's exactly what the big companies like Exxon Mobil that Rex Tillerson was head of, that's exactly what they would like. They would like for gasoline and oil to be black gold, as you heard them say in the Beverly Hillbillies, right? They're going to make it that way. They're going to make it like the diamond industry, where they have control of it and they set the price. So he says, Buttigieg, says we need to take serious climate action to stop it from getting worse. And part of that's going to happen thanks to the investments we're proposing to make everything from electric vehicle infrastructure to more resilient infrastructure planning in our communities. And as I said yesterday, I spent time on this because this is where they're headed to control us. You have to understand that in terms of infrastructure, they are destroying our electricity generating capacity on the grid. Now, you can always go out and get solar and you can buy your own batteries, and that's great. You're off the grid. You're independent. But I'm talking about putting renewables in charge of running the grid. And so they're sabotaging the grid. We've already seen this happen. We've seen it happen in California and Texas and other places. Sabotaging the grid on that end with renewables. On the supply end, they're sabotaging it with their Green New Deal. And on the demand side, they're going to sabotage it with electric vehicles. We're not going to be able to, even if we do half of the electric vehicles, it's going to crash this fragile grid. So they're reducing the capacity of the grid while massively increasing the demand with electric vehicle mandates. And that's not even talking about the raw materials, as I mentioned yesterday. This is a system designed to fail, designed to make sure that you are back into the dark ages where they control everything and monitor you and take down your standard of living. So what are Republicans going to do about this? Well, you've got a U.S. Senator, Jerry Moran, Republican of Kansas, told Politico that that idea, quote, has some red flags among Republicans. Yeah, there's some bad ideas in there. He said part of the motivation is trying to make certain that we don't spend $6 trillion, something the likes of Senator Bernie Sanders and other Marxists has indicated as possible. So there's the Republicans. Well, you know, I'm kind of uncomfortable with some of the stuff that you're doing, but mainly it's just the amount of money that you're spending. Could you do this? Could you rewire our entire society and cripple us? Could you do that for only $5 billion? How about four? Can we do it a little bit more efficiently? If we can, then hey, I'm on board with this. That's how hopeless things are to try to get things fixed in Washington. One more example of how hopeless Washington is. Do not put your trust in Washington. As God said to Israel about Egypt, it is a cane that if you lean on it, it will pierce your hand. And that is definitely true of Washington. Just say we won. A quote from a book about Trump that is coming out, being published by the Washington Post. The title of it, though, is I Alone Can Fix This. Now, regardless of whether any of this stuff is true or not, that title is the essence of the Trump movement, the essence of what I have a problem with the Trump movement. The idea that Trump alone can fix everything. No individual alone can fix everything. Anybody who tells you that, he is not a Superman. He is not all wise. Even the people who are still supporting him say, well, he was deceived by the people around him. He's the president. He gets to pick the people around him. That's why the buck stops with the president, as Harry Truman said. He had that on his desk. The buck stops here. Trump doesn't take responsibility. He takes applause. He demands applause. But, you know, the people who say, well, he was totally lied to by Fauci, it's like, there's other, how did I know? How did other people know? How do you know, by the way, that this vaccine is absolute nonsense and Trump still doesn't know? Because he's still pushing this dangerous thing? So how is that possible, I tell these people. But it's always the idea that only Trump can fix everything. And I'm telling you, that is a false idol. It is idolatry. And it is deception. And let me give you another example of this. As this book is coming out with the title, I Alone Can Fix It, you have an op-ed piece on RT. Love him or hate him, Donald Trump is the only maverick who can free Americans from the big tech gulag. Is that true? That is absolutely not true. If you believe that only Trump can free us, then we're lost. If you're not willing to do anything, if you're going to sit there like a sofa couch potato voyeur and watch Trump, and the only thing you're going to do is try to get Trump back into the White House, if that's your only hope and that's what they want, you're setting yourself up not only for failure, but you're setting yourself up for a civil war eventually. That kind of fascist worship of an individual is very, very dangerous. It bothered me when it was done with Obama. I saw that at the beginning. But this has gotten a lot worse than anything I saw from the left about Obama back in 2008. Is he the only one who can fix this? This guy in this article, Robert Bridge at RT, shame on you, Robert. You write this headline that only Trump can fix this. And it's nothing other than a long list of bad things that were done to Donald Trump by big tech. And we know it's a long list of that. I'd give you a long list of things that they've done to me if I wanted to. I could tell you a lot of things that they've done to you that you may or may not even know. But the bottom line is nowhere in this article does he make a case for why only Donald Trump could fix it. Nowhere in this article does he explain to us why Donald Trump didn't fix it as president. Nowhere in this article does he make an example of or explain how President Trump, former President Trump, can do something now that he couldn't do as president. None of that is explained. Why didn't he do it? What can he do now that he's not president, that he couldn't do when he was president? And why is he the only one who can do this? It's absolute nonsense. And finally, why do we think that we're going to get all the problems solved with a lawsuit? Again, that is something that has kept Roe v. Wade in place all these years. The idea that we're going to fix it at the Supreme Court. And we're still doing that. We're still having abortion control laws put on at state government saying, well, now we're hoping that it'll be heard. And we're hoping that we're going to get a different result. And you know what they call that? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. They call that insanity. We'll be right back. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
It's for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore can love. Is all that I can give.
All right, and as you heard that, that is, I guess the, am I a demisexual? You know, when I hear Nat King Cole talking about that, we now have a new term called a demisexual. People who aren't just sexually attracted to others unless they form strong emotional bonds with them first. How in the world is that coming back, that old-fashioned idea? Well, no, they come up with a new term because it's not really about what we think of as love and marriage. No, it's not about being monogamous. It's not about being heterosexual. It's just, you know, if you're having a bond with somebody, then you're you got to have that first before you have sex. Not a marriage license. None of that stuff. No, no, no. It's just we're not going to be monogamous. There's no commitment here. I just have emotional bond with this person. And this is coming from the daughter of Governor Cuomo, Michelle Kennedy Cuomo, and 23-year-old daughter of Andrew Cuomo. Gerald mentioned it on Friday. And now there's this article, and it was up on the Drudge Report yesterday, brought it back up again. So I thought, all right, I'll take a look at this demisexual stuff. What in the world is this? And this is from The Guardian, and it's written by a person who says, "My old gay eyes rolled involuntarily." So this is a person who considers herself to be gay, or him, I don't know, can't tell from the name. And they don't give any pronouns there, so who knows what they are. But she talked about being queer. She said that she was not hetero in her liberal bubble. She had flirted with bisexuality and pansexuality. I don't know what that is. And then she decided that she was demisexual. So everybody is mocking her about how she's got to make up some kind of a silly thing, as the author of this article said. Is this something to say that you are somehow oppressed because you want to have an emotional bond with somebody before you start, having an orgy or whatever? I don't know what is going on with this crazy society we're in, but it's going to get even crazier. As the Sun is saying, getting married to robots will be considered normal by the end of the century. Will they call them robosexuals? I don't know. I imagine they'll further divide the robosexuals between women who will be called not automatons, but they'll be called automatrons, I guess. And then they'll have C-3POs on the other side if they are a bit effeminate, I guess. People will eventually be falling in love with and having sex with robots, they say. It will not be unusual for someone to tell you, I am in love with a robot, and I'm thinking of marrying it. Well, quite frankly, I've had a lot of men and women in the past tell me that same thing. They might have been thinking about Tommy Lauren or something like that. And then you have this big issue that is broken up with Tommy Lauren and with this, CPAC people over Bruce Jenner, who went to CPAC. Transphobic abuse hurled at Jenner at the CPAC conference, called a sick freak and dead named. Well, I don't have, I don't see the reason to taunt somebody and call them a sick freak. To dead name somebody, you know, I call him Bruce Jenner. I'm not going to play along with that fantasy game, and I'm not going to do that. In terms of the taunting stuff, as he was going out, somebody said, look at that sick freak. I don't think that kind of ridicule is helpful for anybody or for any agenda. It doesn't convince anybody, and we should not expect that people are going to follow our understanding of this. We need to, however, hold clearly to what our understanding is. You know, when I talk about, God creating man and woman, and we have two different sexes, and there's not multiple genders, and we have heterosexual marriage, I understand that is based on the Bible. Now, it happens to also be something that every culture in history has also recognized. Even in Greece, where homosexuality was rampant and widely accepted, they did not have homosexual marriage. They still saw marriage as something that was done to create a family. And the big issue about all of this is the family issue. And so, as one heckler shouted out, Bruce, what do you think about the stuff that they're teaching in schools regarding the LGBTQ? Now, I think that is significant, because what Bruce Jenner has talked about only is the transgender issue in terms of sports competition and how that's not fair. Frankly, that's true, and we can have that discussion. I think it's a much bigger issue, not the fairness, but putting biological men into the showers and the gym, the changing rooms of women. That's a big issue. And it is also a much bigger issue that you're trying to groom children in kindergarten to this LGBT agenda. Those are the big issues. And listen to where Bruce Jenner is on those issues. You know, is Bruce with the Republicans? What is he really fighting for? Well, he tells you what he's really fighting for right here.
Loyalties do not lie with Donald Trump. My loyalty do not lie with the Republican Party. Right. My loyalties and what I'm fighting for is my community, the LGBT community, and particularly the trans issues that are out there, because there are many of them. And so that's where my fight is. And I thought Trump would be pretty good.
So there you go. And Trump actually was pretty good for that agenda. He was right there with the LGBT agenda. He and Melania were very proud of the fact that he was, as Melania pointed out, in campaign videos right before this last election. All you people who voted for him, did you notice that she was out there bragging about the fact that he came in supporting homosexual marriage, that he was the first person to appoint a homosexual to a major cabinet position and all that sort of thing? You've seen him wrap himself in the rainbow flag and all these other issues, and now Tommy Lauren is wrapping herself at Fox News in the rainbow flag. She says there's no room for the America First movement for those who are opposed to Caitlyn Jenner, she said. Hearing how some conservatives called Caitlyn at CPAC makes my blood boil. There's no room for your hate in America First movement. We believe in freedom, and we believe in limited government. The way she chooses to live her personal life harms you in no way. No, it doesn't, quite frankly. Bruce Jenner can do whatever he wants, but he's running for governor because of his identity politics. He's using that. And so it is up for grabs for us to criticize that and to question, why he is running. And you just heard why he's running. He doesn't care about the Republican Party. He doesn't care about the Republican agenda. And oh my, he doesn't care about Trump. Something we have in common. See, I have something in common with Bruce. So we don't disagree on everything. But he doesn't care about limited government or any of these other things. He wants to be in power. He wants to be a celebrity. That's why he's doing this gubernatorial run. And so it's a legitimate thing to put that on the table and to ask about that issue. And quite frankly, I'll just say, I'm not America first. You know, I'm a Christian first. I'm God first. And as America has thrown God out, that's why we're getting this kind of clown show that we see. And we're getting people who, again, if you want to marry a robot, Tommy Lauren is still available. She was one of the first to give Jenner her complete and total endorsement back in May, says Information Liberation. And Chris Minahan has the same opinion of Tommy Lauren as I do. Says his candidacy, Bruce's candidacy, just like Tommy Lauren, is a sick joke. He only got 6% in a poll. But, of course, he gets to be on all the different talk shows. Why? Because this is virtue signaling about an agenda. The same thing is happening with the Emmys. You have a show, evidently, it's a show called Pose. And it's got as its star a transgender, MJ Rodriguez, makes history, becoming the first trans woman nominated in the lead acting category. And I think by that what they mean is a man who is dressed up like a woman. And this is not a big accomplishment, quite frankly. This is easy peasy. As a matter of fact, I had someone who makes films say, you can't even get a film distributed anymore if you don't have a heavy dose of LGBT stuff in it. I mean, they're looking for this. They want to reward this. You're not even going to be able to get your film made or distributed if you don't do this by the major streamers. By the film companies. It's a requirement. So this is not a big deal. This is being pushed from the above. This is not an accomplishment from the bottom up. And where does all this end? Well, this is the key issue. It's not where it ends, but I mean, this is what it is really focused around. And this is what Bruce Jenner doesn't want to talk about. What is happening at the kids, the sexualization of the kids. Advocates are slamming Chicago for making condoms accessible to elementary school kids, starting in fifth grade. This is 11-year-old kids they're handing condoms out to in Chicago. This is what is truly sick about this. And this is the sexualization of our kids. This is the Brave New World agenda. And you know that it's being done for exactly the same reasons that it was done in Brave New World. Because in Brave New World, what did they do? They handed out drugs to kids, free sex to kids in school. That was a key part of it. And they did that to keep them passive. Don't give a damn, take a gram of Soma, right? That was the slogan that they gave them. So, you know, take drugs, have sex, and don't care about what we're doing because we're going to run everything. And then they had the hatcheries where they created the kids because they didn't want anybody to they didn't want families, just like Plato's Republic. No parents. We will be the God and father and mother to you. The government will be. And we'll determine how many people there are. We'll determine what sex they are. We'll determine even their intelligence level. We'll deprive them of oxygen, the epsilons. Not with the Fauci masks, but, you know, as they were developing as babies. So you got conservative advocacy groups are speaking out against a new policy in the Chicago public schools requiring that condoms be made accessible to kids as young as fifth grade at nearly all 600 public schools at the start of the school year next month. Advocacy organizations that encourage kids to avoid engaging in adolescent sex believe that condoms to children in any state, city, or county could potentially lead to bigger issues. Yeah, and sexualizing kids. That's exactly what this is about. And this has been going on for a long time. When I talk about parental rights, and when I talk about the doctrine of in loco parentis, operating in place of the parents, the first time I saw that term used was back in the early 90s, I believe. It was either early 90s or late 80s. That was a case where you had a father who did not want his child, I don't remember if it was male or female, boy was in third grade, 8 years old, did not want that child in a sex education class that had become very explicit. And he said, no, I don't want him in. They said, well, we're going to put him in anyway. So he went to the school to take his kid out. They arrested him for trespassing. And then they took him to court in Massachusetts, and the judge said, you have absolutely no rights over your child. Once you drop that child off at the school, you have abandoned them to the state. And the doctrine is, in loco parentis, we will operate in place of the parents. And so now what are they doing? Well, they're doing all kinds of crazy stuff with the kids, but it is truly about parental rights. Children at 11, said Marianne Mozaz, a representative from a Washington, D.C.-based organization with a mission to empower youth globally to avoid potential risks of sexual activity. She said, children at 11 need a parent intervention, not a piece of latex. Some people think that children should be able to sexually explore, but children are not cognitively, emotionally, or physically ready to handle these kinds of acts. You notice what's missing here, the spiritual aspect of it. Again, we've taken God out of our schools. God is out of our policies. We don't even acknowledge the spiritual aspects of this. But even from a pragmatic standpoint, do we still understand what pedophilia is? Do we understand that when you have these drag queen story hours and that disgusting thing that happened in the UK, you've seen it, the guy in the monkey rainbow suit, right? Sexualizing kids to teach them how to read? No, it's not about that at all. And they're coming after these kids in elementary school. Yeah, if you're 6 years old, as we saw with James Younger here in Texas, you can decide that you're a different gender. And why would you decide that when you're so far away from puberty? Why are you even thinking about sex at 6 years old? I didn't think about sex at 6 years old. It's because it's being presented to them, pushed on them. They're being groomed by the LGBT. They're being groomed by these teachers, these psychologists, these doctors, the doctors who are going to be doing the procedures to them to physically change them and mutilate them by the time they get to be 8 years old. That was what was going to happen here in Texas, where the judge said, all right, the mom decided that he is expressing feminine ideas and that therefore he must be a transgender girl. And we are going to chemically castrate him at the age of 8. This is insidious. And this is nothing other than grooming society to accept pedophilia. Because if the children can determine this type of thing and permanently alter their bodies by the time they're 8 years old, 4 or 5 years away from puberty or whatever, I don't know when it hits. I guess 12 or something like that. I can't remember. It was so long ago. Anyway, if they can make those kinds of decisions, then obviously they can make a decision to have sex consensually. So let's just give them condoms. Children at 10 or 11 should not be sexually active. Any policy that would reinforce such an idea is depraved and benefits those who would seek to sexually exploit children. That's what the LGBT agenda is about. That's the uncomfortable truth for the GOP and for the people who talk to Bruce Jenner. They don't want to talk about that. They don't want to talk about even having biological males in bathrooms and showers with females because of sports. No, they'll just talk about, well, it's not fair. They could beat them in the race. They could lift more weights than them. That is not the issue. I can understand why Bruce Jenner would try to focus on that, because that allows him to kind of straddle the fence. But that is not the issue. Children do not have a right to sex. Children are not sex objects, and they can never meaningfully consent to sexual acts. Adults cannot claim these false rights for children, because the adults who do are nothing other than exploiters and pedophiles themselves. Let me give you an example of something that I did 10 years ago. 11 years ago, I think it was, talking about parental rights. And parental rights was an issue at the time because this was being pushed by, wait for it, the UN. The UN who pushed the war on drugs, the UN who was pushing the Great Reset, the UN who was pushing this agenda. Because the idea with the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child was the idea that children have rights. No, they don't, because they don't have any responsibility. They don't have the ability to make these kinds of decisions. Therefore, they don't have any responsibility and they don't have any rights when it comes to sexual issues, when it comes to gender issues, when it comes to driving or drinking or any of this stuff, right? So the whole idea behind this is being pushed by the UN was to treat children as adults. And of course, conversely, they treat adults like children. That's what we're also seeing now with the lockdown. But this is where we were 10, 11, 12 years ago. The U.S. is the only country that has not signed on to the UN Convention for the Rights of the Child.
No government, no matter how well-intentioned, can replace the nurturing love of a parent. Yet in the United States, judicial activism and a pending UN treaty are poised to tear apart this most fundamental bond of society. These foreign and domestic threats would undermine the parental role and overrule parental wishes. All parents would have the legal status of an abusive parent, with the state and not the parents deciding what is in the best interest of the child. The relentless encroachment of judges and UN treaties that assume that government, not parents, has the best interest of the child at heart will be stopped by nothing short of a constitutional amendment explicitly stating the rights of parents. Decisions affecting the child should be made by those who know and love that child, not by a distant bureaucracy. You can help protect children by helping those who care the most for them and those who care the best for them, the family. Find out what you can do at parentalrights.org.
And I don't know if that organization even exists anymore. They had like a two-line sentence and said, we need to make this constitutional amendment to try to block this, to try to block this treaty, to try to block activist judges. But of course, I don't think anymore that a constitutional amendment is going to stop anything. It'd be great to have it. It'd be great because we would rally people around the concept in order to get it. And that's the key thing, is that you have to have the vast majority of people buy into a concept. And if you do that, I mean, we didn't have a constitutional amendment that said we have a right to medical marijuana. But what we did was we created a massive, there was a massive movement saying, well, if I want to use this for medicine, it's none of your business. And of course, the Constitution already said it was none of government's business, the 9th and 10th Amendment. And of course, the 18th Amendment made it clear that that was the case. You had to have a specific amendment to prohibit alcohol, the 21st Amendment to bring it back in. So we knew that they didn't have the constitutional authority already, and they don't have the constitutional authority to override parents. But it would be good to have something like that. I don't know if that organization is still pushing that or not at this point. We have Abigail Schreier worrying that teenage gender transitions are going to lead to irreversible damage. Well, that's, of course, obvious, isn't it? I mean, it's not just the sexual grooming and the pedophile agenda that's happening here, but we are physically harming people who do, children who do not have the maturity to make these kinds of decisions. They got to get their parents' permission to go on a field trip, and they should. In the last decade, there's been a sudden explosion, she said, in teenage girls identifying as transgender. She wrote a book called Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze, Seducing Our Daughters. She said, my book explores what's going on. Why do so many young teenage girls suddenly decide that they want to leave womanhood? And why are so many doctors and therapists and teachers helping them? As I've said before, you know, my sons look at this and their friends and they say, you know, where are the Entwives? Remember that from Treebeard and Lord of the Rings? It's like all the women have gone. We can't, they're all gone. We can't find anybody that wants to get married, you know. Where is a monogamous demisexual who, they're gone as well. Schreier's book says an ACLU attorney is a dangerous polemic with a goal of making people not trans. Well, why is that wrong? I mean, if you can have a goal of making people trans, if you can have a goal of turning six-year-olds into trans, why are we not allowed to talk in the other direction, right? And that's why the ACLU and these other people are now supporting measures that are going to censor any Christian speech. They're going to censor Christian conversion. because they see it as conversion therapy. Yes, conversion is therapeutic. But it is not a psychological, it's not a brainwashing thing. And but it is a way for them to stop speech of one direction. It's okay for them to evangelize six-year-olds and tell them that they need to be trans. But if you tell them, hey, there's another way and you don't have to do that, or if you just want to leave them alone, that's not allowed either. You know, that's the other issue. It's not allowed for you to tell them about traditional roles, and it's not allowed for them to be left alone. So where's the liberty in that when there's only one way that you're allowed to think? We know what's going on here. We have abortion backers suing to block a Texas law that would allow private lawsuits against those who obtain the procedure. This is how it's different. All these other laws, as they point out on Breitbart, they pass a lot of these heartbeat laws, and they're saying, now we're hoping that with new judges in the Supreme Court, maybe they will overturn Roe v. Wade. They will not. As they point out here, courts have blocked these laws, these heartbeat bill laws. As long as you have a heartbeat, you cannot kill the baby. Because it's not the woman's body, it's another heartbeat. And they're beating at a different rate. Many times the baby has a different blood type. Half the time the baby is a different gender, different sex. So it's not your body, it's another body. But they said the courts have blocked these laws, ruling that they're unconstitutional in light of the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade. And I'm telling you, that's why they're not going to do anything about this, because the idea that the Supreme Court can change the Constitution or rule even on the constitutionality of a law, that goes back to Marbury versus Madison. And when Thomas Jefferson commented on that, he said, well, that is the end of the Constitution right there. If the Supreme Court can tell you that this or that is not constitutional, if they can tell you that the Constitution is not constitutional because they can reinterpret it, that's it. We don't have the rule of law anymore. We have the rule of judges. It took a couple hundred years for that to really be put into place, but we've seen that in spades. And the key linchpin in all of this is Roe v. Wade. That decision, and you've heard it how many times? Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. The Supreme Court does not make law. But between Marbury versus Madison, where they could declare that any law was constitutional or not constitutional, and Roe v. Wade, where they could claim that they were writing law, between those two things, that is the linchpin of judicial supremacy. And they're not going to touch that. Now, Texas has decided that what they will do, still taking things into the judicial system, right, instead of using the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, what Texas decided they would do is to say that any citizen could file a civil lawsuit against an abortion provider or any other individual who aids or abets a criminal abortion. And they would block people who had impregnated a woman through rape, sexual assault, incest, things like that, from challenging an abortion through a lawsuit. But again, that is the method that they're trying to use with that. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back to talk about what the Democrats are doing. All right, and where are they going to run away? I wonder where she's going to stay. Well, I think she's going to go to Washington, D.C. I think that's where she's going to stay. You saw that picture of the Democrats running away from Texas during their selfies? Pretty much every single one of them, a woman. Where will she run away? Because we can pretty much bet that most of the Democrats are women. Well, they're going to run to Washington, D.C., the District of Criminals, because that is the dream location of every Democrat. Congratulations. You just won a free trip to Washington, D.C., where you can stay, where you always wanted to be, where your life ambition is to live there and to work there. And so now the Texas Democrats, because they do not like an election law that is going to pass if they were to stay here, because of the Republican majority, they decided that they would run away and make sure that there wasn't a quorum, so that the legislature could not meet. And they're going to run away and stay away until the special session of the legislature is done, they say. And so this has invited a lot of observations about what they're doing as they were putting out on social media and laughing and bragging about this. Well, there were pictures of them, first of all, on the airplane. And I showed you those pictures. Here's some more of these pictures. Look at this. Not a single mask on anybody. And they're in an airplane. How in the world could that happen? Here as well. Here's another picture of them all on the airplane. Not a mask to be found. Now, how did that work out? I mean, it was their own president, Biden, and the TSA, who said you got to wear a mask on an airplane. No exceptions. As a matter of fact, anybody who doesn't wear a mask, except for Democrat legislators in Texas who are running away, gets hit with a $10,000 to $20,000 fine by the FAA, the Fauci Air Administration or whatever. They get hit with excessive fines. Oh, these people are not going to get hit with excessive fines? Of course not, because there's two different sets of laws. This is common when a country turns to Marxism. The political leaders are exempted from everything. They get to determine who is essential and who isn't. They get to run everything, and the laws do not apply to them. They're not under the law. They're not under the Constitution. They can do whatever they wish. And so they can get a charter plane, and they can fly their charter plane without wearing any masks. And, oh, by the way, the FAA's rule still applies to charter planes. But don't expect that that's going to happen. I would like to see the Republicans in Texas demand that. That would be what they really should do. But instead, what they're saying is they passed a law saying that they would be arrested when they come back to Texas. They can't arrest them in Washington, D.C., but once they get into Texas, they can arrest them. As a matter of fact, that's the reason they left, was because if the legislators fail to show up, they can be compelled to show up by the state police or whoever, any law enforcement people. But yeah, just look at this. Snakes on a plane. Remember that Samuel L. Jackson movie? That's what immediately comes to mind when I look at that. So they get a, they charter a boat, they charter, not a boat, a bus, they charter a plane. And when they're on the bus, also taking selfies on the bus, people notice that they have a case of Miller Lite on the bus too. But these poor people, they are talking about sacrifice as they're laughing it up, as they're taking pictures, as they're doing songs. You know, it's kind of like going to summer camp for these people. I imagine that we're going to be inundated with TikTok videos next because they're calling themselves heroes. They said, our sacrifice is nothing. Well, I would agree. It is nothing. You haven't sacrificed anything. Oh, by the way, what is that law that they hate so much? Well, that law that they are trying to avoid having pass is a law that would require voter ID. And you know what? That is a losing issue for them. The vast majority of people, even Democrats, support voter ID. As a matter of fact, photo ID is supported by 62% of Democrats, 87% of independents, and 91% of Republicans. And that's why these Democrats have left the state and gone to Washington, D.C., because they don't want to have photo ID. What's the problem with that? That's not racist. When you oppose photo ID, it's simply because you want to allow people to vote early and to vote often. I've told the story many times, going back to the 2012 election. A friend of my brother-in-law's went to vote because in North Carolina, they had the longest voting period, and they had no photo ID. And so he went on election day to vote, and all you have to do is give them a name and an address. You can vote the phone book, folks, and you got plenty of time to do it in North Carolina. And so he showed up, and they gave him a name and said, no, you've already voted. No, I haven't. Yeah, you voted, and so has this other person at your house. That's my mother. She died years ago. Now, he did not file a complaint, so the people in North Carolina kept saying, what? There isn't anything like that. That's not happening here. We haven't had any complaints. He didn't want to get involved in it. You know, he complained to his friends about it, but he didn't file a formal complaint. Just didn't have time to interrupt his life with that. But when you oppose photo ID, when you want instant voter registration, when you want people to be able to vote in multiple jurisdictions and vote by mail and all these other things, it's simply because you're trying to rig the system. We all know that. And so now they're leaving, and they're saying that if they come back, they're going to be arrested. I think they ought to go after them for the $10,000 to $20,000 fines, these excessive fines that are being done by the FAA. Get their attention. Make them live under that law. I think it was Ulysses Grant. He said the way that you end a bad law is to rigorously enforce it. So they should rigorously enforce that bad regulation. It's not even a law. This is a regulation of excessive fines without due process by bureaucracy, the FAA. We have taxation without representation. We have regulation without representation. So stick it on these Democrats for a change. Dan Crenshaw said the idea that this is a sacrifice. He said, it's hard to imagine a more delusional group of people thinking that lying about these bills, hopping on a chartered flight, sipping beer, and skipping work is somehow sacrifice. You guys are pathetic. Totally pathetic. Media Research Center analyst and columnist Nicholas Fondacaro tweeted, he said, you didn't leave behind or sacrifice anything. You're going on vacation. That's exactly what they are. But again, where else would you go? I mean, the only place that would be any better, if you're a Democrat, than going to Washington, D.C., would be going to Cuba with Castro, as de Blasio did, or as Bernie Sanders did, to take your honeymoon in the Soviet Union, except the Soviet Union doesn't exist. So they go to Washington, D.C., the closest thing next to that. So by a vote of 76-4, the Texas legislature authorized state troopers to arrest the members, along with possibly activating the use of arrest warrants to get them back into the state, extradite them. But I still think that better than that is to hit them in the pocketbook, $10,000, $20,000 fines. The state House representatives who were in the Capitol in Austin right now, said the governor, they have the ability to issue a call to have their fellow members who are not showing up to be arrested, but only so long as that arrest is made in the state of Texas, said Abbott, as he got on news taking credit for this. And it wasn't him. It was the legislature that was issuing that. But again, that's Greg Abbott for you. Always putting himself in the limelight, taking credit for things that he didn't do. Such as, well, we've talked about the many things that he did not do. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Yeah, so it's time for a vaccine update about Moderna and Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson. And you saw that's the Stephen Colbert Show, where he has become nothing other than a pathetic pharmaceutical salesman. Unbelievable. It's even worse than what you see on Fox News and CNN. And by the way, as a word of explanation and as a welcome to our Aftermath listeners who are on an audio, live audio feed, Aftermath FM, if you want to get a live audio stream of the show. We have visual streams on Twitter, as well as on Trovo and DLive. And, of course, on all these platforms that are live, you can also make comments. But we added the audio live stream there at Aftermath FM. So we've had people who've asked us, you know, what is that beeping that's going on there? Well, that was a commercial that we'd prepared quite some time ago. And we're telling everybody where they could support the operation. And we had where the, you now have that beeped out. We had talked about PayPal and about Venmo. They will not allow us to use them anymore. And so we left that there, put a beep in, and put a big red X over it. So it's kind of self-explanatory if you're watching it, but not so much if you're listening to it. So welcome to the Aftermath.fm listeners. But let's talk about the vaccine. As a matter of fact, you have kind of a milestone. I talked about this on Monday. You had the statistics that were released up to July the 2nd. And of that last week, ending in July 2nd, you had another 2,000 people added to the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, VAERS, run by the CDC. Another 2,000 deaths from these vaccines reported. And I don't know if it is still holding up this particular statistic, but it was overwhelming, much more than 50% a couple of months ago when this began to be thousands of people. It was way over 50% of the people reported as dead who had had an immediate onset of things that killed them or died within 24 to 48 hours, or they had an immediate onset of the conditions that eventually resulted in their death in a couple of days. And Gateway Pundit noticed that with 2,000 people being added in this last report in just 1 week, 2,000 people jumped from 7,000 reported dead to 9,000 reported dead. That's a 28% jump. And, of course, a lot of this is happening because the CDC is manipulating when these figures are going to be released to people to some extent. But still, with more than 2,000 vaccine deaths reported in 1 week, we had more people reported as dying of vaccine deaths than we did reported as dying of COVID deaths. We had 1,500 people reported dying of COVID deaths, and over 2,000 people, 2,043, reported dying from the vaccines. That's pretty significant. That's about a 30% increase. 30% more people died from the vaccine that week than died from the most recent week than died from COVID. And when you look at how these deaths are tallied, remember that to have a COVID death reported, most of these were done with a clinical diagnosis, not even with a PCR test at the beginning. They were told to do clinical diagnoses of people that they were treating and getting extra bonuses because they get, you know, you diagnose somebody as having COVID, and the Trump administration would give you $13,000 bonus as a hospital. And then if you put them on a ventilator, you get another $39,000. And then everything that you do to that person, all the treatment that they get on a daily basis for the ventilator, all of the drugs, the remdesivir that cost thousands of dollars, and everything else that you do for them, you get to add a bonus of 20 to 25%. And all that is done with just a clinical diagnosis. When you had people who died, they didn't do autopsies. They were told, if it looks like, if it's a respiratory illness, probably COVID, so just call it that. And you had a physician who was also a state senator who pointed that out last year, and they tried to get him have his medical license removed because he simply read to people what the CDC was telling people. So these were clinical diagnoses. These were just opinions. They weren't necessarily even based on PCR tests. Then they pulled in the PCR tests after they started manufacturing them en masse. And they would magnify any viral debris by 2 to the 40th power. That's 1 trillion times magnification. The Kerry Mullis, who was the inventor of that, won a Nobel Prize for that, had criticized Fauci for abusing that test during the AIDS epidemic, said he doesn't know how this thing works. You can't magnify these things to this level. And Fauci even admitted himself that it's useless after you get past 2 to the 30th. We're talking about much, much more magnification than that because we're talking about an exponential increase. And so with this exponential increase, the PCR test, they were finding people positive who had no symptoms. And then if the people were identified as positive, and even we had situations where they would die from things that clearly were not respiratory related, even accidents. You had a guy in Texas. The coroner put him down as a COVID death, even though he died in a motorcycle accident because he'd had a positive test. And even when he was called out on it, the coroner said, well, could be. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you a story, a personal story. We had someone that we know whose daughter is in Girl Scouts, sold a lot of cookies last year, and she won a trip to the camp, which she was excited about, very excited to do it, but they canceled it because of COVID last year. So she poured into it again this year. And again, she sold so many cookies that she won a free trip. And then they said, well, you can't go unless you get a PCR test to the camp. And so she got a PCR test and it came back positive. She was devastated. So they did another one and it came back positive. And then they did another one and it came back negative. So now she's good to go. Just roll the dice. It's unbelievable what is happening with this. But that's how they get their deaths. Yeah, and you have people who are being financially rewarded. And it wasn't just the doctors and the hospitals. The families were being financially incentivized to say it was a COVID death too, because you could get money to help pay for funeral expenses with a COVID death. On the other hand, how do you determine these deaths from the vaccines? Well, these are typically people who, again, develop these symptoms right away. They're dead within a few days. Many cases, they started getting the headaches or whatever, then the blood clots in the brain that killed them 5 or 6 days later, but the headaches began right away and just kept getting more and more intense. Those are being reported at a very close connection to that, and yet that's being ignored. And it's being ignored the fact that we've had 2,000 of those where there's only 1,500 COVID deaths in the last one of these. You have a Reuters report saying that we are keenly interested in knowing whether or not the third dose could be associated with a higher risk of adverse reactions, particularly some of those being severe, because in the U.S., they're pushing back against the idea that these vaccine billionaires, I mean, the bloodlust is up. I mean, these vaccine billionaires, given so much cash by President Trump, again, talked about what happened yesterday to Moderna. If you haven't seen that, we cut that out separately so that you can pass that around. People need to understand the obscene amounts of money that were given to these people, how they were given seed money by DARPA back in 2013, how Wall Street and the banks gave them a massive IPO when they had operated for 8 years without a single product, nothing ever approved until Trump approved this drug and moved all of the regulatory oversight out of the way at warp speed. And then they wound up going from a surprise IPO of $7.5 billion when they were losing money and hadn't had a single product for 8 years. They had a $7.5 billion IPO back in 2018. Their market cap is now up to $88 billion, from $7.5 billion to $88 billion. Yeah, they're making money hand over fist. The CEO went from zero to hero. He now has a net worth of $4 billion. And this is, again, like blood in the water to sharks. They can never have enough of this stuff. So they want to have some more booster shots. It's only been 6 months since they started doing the first of these vaccines. And now they're saying, now we've got to do another round of these things. Come on, I need some more money. Never satisfied. Always want more. And so you've got some people at the CDC who are saying, ooh, I'm not so sure about that. Again, we're keenly interested in knowing whether or not a third dose might be associated with a higher risk of adverse effects, said Jay Butler, deputy director at the CDC. He may not be there much longer if he's going to push back against the vaccine companies. He said he's not seen any evidence of waning immunity to COVID-19 among U.S. residents who receive shots in December or January. Why would you, if your vaccine can't even convey immunity that lasts for 6 months, why would you even want to take a third shot of this stuff? It's garbage. Absolute total garbage, if that's the case. And it is, but it's very dangerous garbage as well. But in Israel, they are signing on to this for Pfizer because they have basically just signed everything away to Pfizer. So natural infection versus vaccination, which one is going to give you better protection, right? I mean, if you get the disease and your body is able to handle it, your body has been trained, right? Isn't that the whole point of getting a vaccine? It's supposed to train your body to deal with a disease. And yet, as I point out, when you look on YouTube, I look for these videos that they're pushing to people to try to push this agenda. They must be getting some pretty good kickbacks at Google for pushing this garbage on people. Here's one from a kind of a Tommy Lahren doctor from Stanford. And she's going to explain this to you, why, even if you've recovered from this and you have natural immunity, why you should still get the vaccine.
Hey, I'm Victoria Ward. I'm a pediatrician and the medical director for Digital Medic. Welcome back to Viral Facts. Today we're going to talk about whether you should get the COVID vaccine, even if you've been infected with the COVID virus in the past. This has been a frequently asked question, and the short answer is yes, absolutely. In fact, it's the most reliable way to protect yourself and others from getting a COVID infection in the future. Let's talk about why. First, although there is a lot of research being done to determine if infection with the virus will prevent future infection, the answer isn't yet known.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, that kind of reminds me of the old joke. What do you call the person who finishes at the bottom of their class in medical school? Doctor. You may also call them the publisher of Viral Facts. What does it mean? Did she skip that class on the immune system? I mean, again, the whole theory that they're trying to put out there is the idea, you know, the whole idea of a vaccine is that it's going to train your body to deal with something. Well, if you do have an immune system, and if you've been sick and you've recovered from it, you really do have real immunity, not this kind of phony stuff coming from the pharmaceutical companies that they don't have any confidence in, they say. And when you look at what is happening in Israel, even though they're going to sign up because, again, they've sold their soul to Pfizer Pharmaceutical, Netanyahu did, and there's a lot of Israelis who are very upset about that. They are ahead of everybody else in terms of vaccine mandates, in terms of these authoritarian, draconian measures to punish people who aren't vaccinated. And whatever Pfizer wants, Pfizer gets. But as they looked at the people in Israel who had been vaccinated and subsequently got sick with COVID versus the people who had not been vaccinated, they said nearly 40% of new COVID patients were vaccinated compared to only 1% who had been infected previously. So they said of 835,000 Israelis known to have recovered from the virus, that means that they had a positive test. They may or may not have had it. The 72 instances of reinfection account to 0.0086%. I mean, that's a lot of decimal points, you know, behind the zero and a percentage as well. Whereas the people who were vaccinated and still got sick was seven times higher. Very interesting. Very interesting. And then what is coming next? Well, they just can't do enough vaccines, and they can't do enough genetic modification. And so you have a story coming out of France 24. Gene editing blocks virus transmission in human cells. So the answer is that to save us all from this pandemic that you can't see unless you watch CNN, we are going to have some more gene editing that is going to take place. They have used CRISPR to do tests, and they say that they can bind to using CRISPR-Cas 13B. It's not CRISPR-Cas 9. I guess it's a different version. It binds to the relevant RNA sequences on the coronavirus and degrades the genome that it needs to replicate inside human cells. Therefore, that may be something that we need to do. We may need to be right up front about doing genetic modification. Now, they're telling you that genetic modification is only going to be to the bad coronavirus. They're not going to modify you at all, right? How do they know? Do they know what the side effects are going to be? This? Oh, who cares? Just sell it and mandate it, right? That's what pharmaceutical companies want to do. We're not going to do any testing on this stuff. Just sell it and mandate it. Got to get this thing out there. I need some more money. And, you know, we've heard all along when we talk about genetic modification, and I call this a genetic code injection, GCI. And people say, well, mRNA does not modify the DNA. It merely replicates it. Well, no, that's not true either. You know, science has never settled, and we just had Thomas Jefferson University demonstrate in what was called by the people who've looked at it a very elegant experiment to show, to prove, that for mammals, it is possible for mRNA to modify the DNA, not just to copy it. And that's essentially what they're talking about here. We'll go in and we'll use the CRISPR-Cas9, but we'll only modify the coronavirus. Let me tell you, the mRNA vaccines are capable of modifying your DNA, and now they're talking about doing it yet again in a different way. Let's take a quick look at America held hostage on this Wednesday, 14th of July, year of our Lord, 2021, day 487 of America held hostage. And now, as I pointed out yesterday, they are going deep on vaccine mandates in France, pushed by globalist Emmanuel Macron. Variety discussed it in terms of the Cannes Film Festival, which is happening right now, because they've already had regulations that would apply to any gathering of more than 5,000 people. And they have more than 5,000 people showing up to the Cannes Film Festival. And so as a result, the people going to the Cannes Film Festival had to either have the vaccine passport that has been now authorized by the EU. They call it the EU Digital COVID Certificate, commonly called the Health Pass. Where is this coming from? This is a product of Davos. This was put together. I reported this last summer. I said, look at what Davos has put together. You know that they're going to do the vaccine passport. You had the guy from Harvard saying, oh, why are they calling this a vaccine passport? Because that's what it is. That's what Davos clearly made it, a vaccine passport. And they suggested that the way this ought to work is that they would either test you and then report this, or they would vaccinate you and report it. And it would go up through trusted sources, they said, and be stored at a central location so that governments everywhere could verify this for international travel, but also for domestic travel. And they even created an app. It was called the Commons Project, where they put all this together. And the Commons Project created the Common Pass. Now, everybody that has been putting these things together is basically doing a variation of that, whether they are using the actual app or they're just using it as a pattern, as a template for whatever they're doing. It's all the same. It's working the same everywhere. And so if you didn't have this because you weren't a European citizen and you wanted to go to the Cannes Film Festival, you'd have to do the tests, and then you'd have to do the test every 48 hours. And you would not be able, it's mandatory for everybody to show the health pass upon entering the Palais where screenings were taking place. But if you didn't have access to that, you could get a PCR test, and you could get tested every 48 hours during the festival, but you could still go to the gala screenings at the Lumiere and the Debussy theaters because they were actual cinemas. So it didn't apply there. Is this a pandemic or not? Is this an emergency or not? Well, clearly it is an emergency because listen to the date time frame that Emmanuel Macron is going to be rolling this out. He is saying that it'll become mandatory for all cultural venues, including cinemas, theaters, and concert halls, starting on July 21st. Well, that's kind of convenient because now he's not going to step on the toes of the Cannes Film Festival in terms of people going to the theater. So he's going to conveniently wait until after the movie people leave to step up the regulations. Isn't that nice of him? Isn't it nice that we can delay the response for this emergency for that? So it'll be in the movie theaters, concert halls, theaters, July 21st. The mandates to have the tests and the passes and the passes. Then in August, it'll become mandatory in cafes, shops, and restaurants, as well as trains, planes, and other places, because I guess they're not going to have any automobiles. And then it will continue to escalate into September. They will add it in new places in September. And so you got to ask yourself, if this is a true emergency, Why are they waiting another couple of weeks to put it in some venues and another couple of weeks to put it in other venues? And then in September, they're going to roll it out for schools and things like that. Why is this rolling out in slow motion? Because it's not an emergency. Because it's not a pandemic. Because it is psychological conditioning. And I guess it fits when you're talking about France. They're going to boil the frogs slowly. The old analogy certainly does fit. And that's what Macron is doing. He's slowly boiling those frogs. And if you remember at the beginning of this, it's been the narrative from the Hollywood left and all the rest of them, the mantra that Trump killed 600,000 people or whatever. Why? Because he didn't lock things down quickly enough? I mean, they've been telling everybody, hey, this is a pandemic, and he should have locked everything down right away, and he didn't, and so people died. So why is this guy rolling things out over a period of 6 weeks or more, actually 2 months, slowly rolling it out over a period of 2 months to fully get it out there? Because it is nothing other than psychological conditioning. One person put out a video, France has lost all of her freedoms. The president has spoken. This is what the translation from French. The president has spoken. The vax is compulsory for people working in hospitals, medical centers. The sanitary passes everywhere, even in hospitals, and above a group of 50 people. He said that everybody will probably have to be vaccinated. France has lost all of her freedom, and it's worse than China, said the person. Perhaps that is why I got kicked off of YouTube. You know, my three strikes, one of those three strikes was a video that said 2020 was the year the world became China, because it was. The real virus, folks, is not something that is in your body. The real virus is what they are doing politically and legally to you. It was what was monitored, what was modeled, in China. Do you remember all of the nonsense stuff that we were shown at the beginning, people foaming at the mouth, people collapsing in the street? I remember seeing the video of that guy collapsing in the street. He said, look at this. He just falls down and dies. How do you know he died, first of all? Secondly, if you look at the video of that guy falling down, it looks like a very bad Hollywood fall. It looked staged to me. And then they showed the crowded hallways and the hospitals. And I said, I've been to China. Everything in China is crowded. I would imagine that their hospitals are unbelievably crowded. I've never seen anything like the train station that we went through in the interior of China. Very different from the train station that went from Guangzhou to Hong Kong. But in the interior of China, it was unbelievable. The mass of people and how dangerous it was. It was so dangerous that we had the people who were there with our adoption personally escorted us there. They bought a ticket for themselves. They weren't going to take the train ride. They bought a ticket for themselves so they could guard us to get onto the train, and then said, shut the door and don't get out. They had, as we were walking there, they had a kiosk that was blue and white, and it was blaring, and it had some symbols on it. It looked like it was a police thing, and we were standing there waiting for something. And so I asked the guide, I said, what is all that about? And he goes, well, that's the police. They're afraid to come here. That's why we're here. He said, they're afraid to come here because it's so dangerous. And that's a recorded message telling people how many people were killed here at the train station last week. I said, oh, well, that's good to know. Yeah, this is the world. This is the year that the world became China. They modeled this for us. And I said, you can't believe anything these people in China say. And you can't believe anything that comes out of New York either, New York City. I said, look at all of these reports. And I showed you the reports last year. It was in February when they were talking about, everything is ramping up. And I think it was in February. It might have been in March. They were talking about how crowded the hospitals were. And the same hospitals that were talking about how they didn't have enough staff and they didn't have enough rooms and the people in the hallway, and they showed you the pictures of the people in the hallways, I went back 3 years earlier and found stories from the same news outlets about the same hospitals who had the same conditions, and it was about getting more money 3 years ago. But this year, it was about the pandemic, right? So this hand-picked globalist puppet says from July 21st, the health pass will be extended to places of leisure and culture. For anybody over 12 years old, it'll be necessary to be vaccinated or to present a recent negative test in order to access a show, an amusement park, a concert, or a festival from the beginning of August. The health pass will apply in cafes, restaurants, shopping centers, as well as hospitals, retirement homes, medical and social establishments, but also planes, trains, and buses. Only people who have been vaccinated or who can show a negative PCR test in less than 48 hours old will be able to access any of these places. Everywhere we will have the same approach, said Macron, recognizing civic-mindedness, but putting restrictions on the unvaccinated rather than on everybody else. And that's where we're headed. Right now, you see in the military and a lot of businesses, and people have sent me, they said, can you believe this is happening? Yes, it's happening everywhere. It is a global agenda. All of these corporations and governments are on the same page doing this worldwide. Right now, they're preparing everybody for this. Again, it's the slow boiling frogs. You go into a, in your workplace, if you're not vaccinated, and right now they're just waiting for the FDA to put its rubber stamp on it, to dot the I's and cross the T's, as Fauci said. And after they cross the Rubicon, they will then mandate it. But right now, if you are unvaccinated, you're going to make everybody suffer. You're going to be the person that is making everybody wear masks. Everybody has a social distance because you are in the room. And so just as Macron says, we are going to reward and recognize the civic-minded, and we are going to put restrictions on the unvaccinated. Or as Leanna Wen, the former murdering CEO of Planned Parenthood, said, we will make life easy for the vaccinated, and we'll make it very hard for the unvaccinated. We'll make it impossible for the unvaccinated. We need to vaccinate as quickly as possible, Macron continued. We are a nation of science and of the Enlightenment. They're also a nation of the Jacobin Socialist Revolution, too. For nursing and for non-healthcare personnel in hospitals and clinics and retirement homes, vaccinations will become mandatory as of September the 15th. So they're gradually rolling this out. I mean, we're going to let the old people die for another 2 months because we have to do something right away with all this stuff. Again, as this pandemic is, first of all, not visible all last year, and they can't even come up with manufactured numbers to make this look dangerous. Had 1,500 people die, according to our CDC, from the virus, and yet you had 2,000 people die from the vaccines. So the answer is we've got to have more vaccines. And as this thing is disappearing, we've got to have more and more authoritarian and draconian measures. It never ends because it was never about a virus. Never. Depending on the evolution of the situation, says Macron, the question of compulsory vaccination for all French people is on the table. They will force you to get the jab. He says in colleges, high schools, specific vaccination campaigns will be launched at the beginning of the school year. This fall, PCR tests will become chargeable, as I pointed out yesterday. So right now, they're going to give you, this is the next way that they boil the frogs. Right now, well, okay, you don't have to have a vaccine, but we'll have to test you every 48 hours. You like that thing being shoved up your nose? Oh, and then in a couple of weeks, we're going to charge you big bucks for doing that as well. Unless we're going to make life very hard for you. This is why I talked about how essential local farms are and how we have to have a parallel society. Because we live longer, he said, we will have to work longer and retire later. Not tomorrow. Not suddenly, but uniformly and gradually over several years and by a system that makes a difference according to the work actually done. So you see that? He's saying, you know, we're going bankrupt. It's one of the reasons why we've got to kill all the old people by hook or by crook. We can't afford this retirement system. It's a Ponzi scheme. And because we don't want anybody having babies, that's created a very difficult situation. It could be very, very explosive for us. So we got to get rid of the old people, number one. Number two, you're going to have to work longer, and you're going to get less money when you retire. But don't worry, we'll do it gradually so you'll get accustomed to it, because we don't want to put a shock in the system to really get people angry. The nation owes a response to those who have been most affected by the crisis, he said, especially our youth who have sacrificed so much while risking little themselves. Do you understand that? He just admitted that the young people have virtually no risk from this, but they're going to be the ones who are going to be forced to be vaccinated come the beginning of school year in September. WHO epidemiologist says it was devastating to see fans enjoying the Euro final without wearing masks. This is tweeted out by Maria van Kerkhove. She said, am I supposed to be enjoying watching the transmission happening in front of my eyes? The COVID-19 pandemic is not taking a break tonight. The Delta variant will take advantage of unvaccinated people in the crowd settings, unmasked, screaming, shouting, singing. This is devastating, she added. Well, don't cry for me, Evita. It's none of your business. This excellent article here from Doug Casey. I'll just finish up with this before we bring on Simon Roche. He says, why is it that most people outsource their thinking to the experts? And he said, he was asked a question in an interview. He said, they said to him, thanks to the internet, modern technology, the average person can now access information on almost any topic with relative ease. But it seems like people are doing less critical thinking than ever. Why is that the case? We have a wealth of information. Why is it that we don't use it? Doug Casey wisely said, technology is a double-edged sword when it comes to critical thinking. It's paradoxical that something that is so associated with knowledge and research is often at odds with wisdom. He said, I think it's partly because today's technology offers instant answers. No thought is required. You can just go to Google and the answer is right there at your fingertips, you know, or Wikipedia. Nobody thinks about whether or not it's right or wrong, right? It doesn't require research or thought. The answer just appears. And it subtly obviates the need for contemplation. Let's first define what critical thinking is, said Doug Casey. I'd say it's the process of questioning the validity of assumptions and the accuracy of the data for everything. A critical thinker never assumes or takes anything for granted. We can't always be sure what the quality of a Googled answer is, but most people assume that it's honest and correct. No, no. Google is a search engine that is designed to hide things. Now, however, considering the nature of the people who run Google, Wikipedia, and websites of that nature, I prefer to assume that the quality of many answers is low. In fact, the volume of data available through computer technology is so great that there's a tendency to confuse all of that quantity with quality. He said, as an example, he said, you remember Rollerball, a movie from the 1970s with James Caan? In that movie, books no longer existed. All knowledge was contained in an all-powerful computer. At one point, the scientist in charge of the computer says to another character, he says, yeah, for some reason we lost the 13th century. And he kicks the machine because it's the only source of information anywhere. He says, it's almost where we've gone with Google. Google basically, rather than researching books or getting answers from a dozen points of views, rather than thinking critically about their meaning, we just go to Google and they can memory flush anything. They ask him another question. People are looking at the so-called experts to tell them what they should think about a given topic. Where does this come from? How did most people come to trust the experts? Doug Casey says, well, as the amount and complexity of the data grows, it's natural to want an expert to sort it out for you. But experts are known for knowing a lot about a little, but not having a broad, integrated knowledge. People understandably look to them to make decisions for them, and that's foolish. Better that you go to a philosopher than a technician. In other words, people get a PhD. It's highly specialized. The big problem with a lot of people who get PhDs is that it's too highly specialized for them to get a job. So why are we going to them to get an answer for these broad questions? They're just technicians, as he points out. But he says, unfortunately, philosophers are in short supply today, so people listen to celebrities. A celebrity is someone who's famous for being well-known. People automatically assume that famous people must know something that they don't. And not only that, but they know more about some celebrities than they do about their own friends, their neighbors, even their relatives. And because they know so much about these celebrities, that engenders trust. People trust the celebrity because they think they know the celebrity. And it's just another consequence of mass media. Let me tell you, the celebrities don't even know themselves. That should be pretty obvious if you really know about their lives, isn't it? They really are just actors who don't know anything, but they're good-looking, they're well-promoted, and they have a nice social veneer, so people trust them. It makes no sense. Neither does the public's obsession with credentials. Something like a third of Americans have college degrees, which today only means that they spent a lot of money to be indoctrinated over 4 years. It's no guarantee of expertise. Forget about wisdom or judgment. Over 13% of graduates have master's degrees or PhDs. That also does not prove that they're critical thinkers. Those degrees prove little other than the recipients think that it's a good idea to spend a lot of time and money to get credentials. Credentials should be suspect. Critical thinkers don't assume that credentials are worth anything. As a matter of fact, Francis Bacon, who crafted the scientific method, formulated one of the first things he said was, you know, forget about credentials and experts, right? Look at the data. That's the purpose of the scientific method. Credentials are not worth anything. He said they're often a camouflage for mediocrity. In today's world, their main value is to intimidate by making the public assume that you know what you're talking about. They trust the credential the way they've come to trust Google or Wikipedia. People are comforted to believe that they are, that they should, that they know the answer. And someone with a degree knows an answer to something that they don't know the answer to. So with that, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back, hopefully, with Simon Roche to talk about what is going on in South Africa. We'll be right back.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, and joining us now is Simon Roche. I've talked to him many times over the past years. It's been a while since we've spoken. He has an organization, a part of an organization in South Africa called Suidlanders.org. These are people who have banded together to protect themselves in a very violent, very racist situation that has happened there as the Marxists of the ANC have taken over. And, of course, as we reported earlier this week, things have really exploded there as you've got a couple of different Marxist, one of them trying to throw the previous Marxist president into jail. I mean, both of them are from the ANC, and if I'm correct, and we've talked in the past about the guy that they're trying to put in jail. But the whole country is now exploding into riots and looting. We've got South Africa's largest oil refinery has shut down operations amid ongoing violence. The current president there, Cyril Ramaphosa, said that he believes that this could impact food and medicine supplies, and of course it probably will. But joining us now on the phone to give us an update as to what is happening there is Simon Roche. Thank you for joining us, Simon.
Thank you very much for having Suidlanders on your show again, Mr. Knight.
Tell us a little bit about what you're having, what you're seeing there on the ground, and what you're hearing happening there in the country. It sounds like a very dangerous situation. I've seen pictures not only of massive looting, But I've also seen pictures of people as a mob is approaching down a road, shooting warning shots at the mob throwing rocks at them. I mean, it's a mob of several hundred people. Tell us about what you've been seeing and what you've been hearing.
I think the first point to make is that what is being broadcast on mainstream media is not a fraction of the truth and the reality. Saitlanders, being the organization that we are, with the number of members that we have, is receiving footage that the media is not dreaming of showing. It is far, far, far worse than anybody realizes. When people over recent days have joined the groups that we run, the WhatsApp groups that we've run, they've said, we had no idea. We had no idea that it was this bad. People are being killed. Many businesses are being looted. Many shopping malls and shopping centers and massive trade warehouses, such as we have in South Africa, something a little bit different to the American way of doing things, are being burned to the ground. There is a severe shortage of bread, particularly bread and chicken in South Africa's most populous province, which is the province of KwaZulu-Natal, the traditional home of the Zulu people, and also the home of the largest population of Indians outside of the subcontinent of India. So it's a very interesting place, and it is now going through hell, Mr. Knight.
Yes, and there's been a lot in the news about attacks on India. As a matter of fact, some papers out of India have picked up the threats being made to Indians on Twitter. Indian racism towards black people is worse than white racism. I hope Zulu taxi drivers are mobilizing tonight and returning to Phoenix in the morning. Once and for all, Indians need to know this is not their country. We will sort them out. We must finish them to come. Think of it 8 months ago and so forth. We're seeing all of these threats that are up on, and of course, I guess they're not getting banned on Twitter for making these kinds of threats. But it seems like there is a big clash there against the Indian population, as you point out. Very large in one particular area.
Yeah, and the Indians have taken it upon themselves to defend their neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And the reasoning that's being expressed on social media is, how dare they? You know, implicitly, what's being said is, we just came to rape, loot, and plunder, and you won't believe it, they wouldn't let us. This is literally the implicit nature of these social media comments. People are enraged,
yes,
that the Indians are not allowing them to come into their neighborhoods to do what they're doing everywhere else. It's bizarre. It's you know, it's just incredible.
We've seen that here in the U.S.
enormous racialty.
Yes, yeah. And we've seen that here in the U.S. as you've had situations where we had our riots that were happening here. And you had people showing up, and a lot of times it was people who were immigrants, who were Asian or Chinese or Vietnamese or whatever, and they would protect their own property. And the social media comments of people who were there to loot, and they had the same comment, yelling and screaming at them, what is the matter with you? You mean you're going to stand? And they weren't taking shots at anybody. They were just standing there with armed guns saying, you know, do not come here. Leave our stuff alone. How dare you implicitly threaten us if we're going to steal from you? I mean, that was the same attitude, and we've seen that here as well. It's amazing.
You know, Mr. Knight, this thing is not at all spontaneous, and it's not at all opportunistic. It's a completely false narrative, which we, Saitlanders and others, have managed to expose in recent days, to the extent that the media is now confronting the Minister of Police inter alia. And it's turned out that the Police Crime Intelligence Division, so it's an organ of state that is all to do with intelligence, has revealed that the entire event is being driven by four former senior directors of national intelligence. Equivalent to the CIA or something roughly along those lines, if you like. So this is 100% intentional. It's 100% directed wherever it is directed. And so you have this dichotomy of these Indian folks saying, well, look, this is, it's completely planned, completely orchestrated. It's a concerted thing. We're just trying to prevent you from raping our women. And you're telling us that when this is over, you're going to come back and you're going to give it to us twice as hard, that we're going to be even more the victim of crime and violence than we have been hitherto. So it's engendering a racial antagonism that's unlikely to dissipate even in years.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about the people that are ostensibly the key players that's kicked all this off, Jacob Zuma and Cyril Ramaphosa, because Jacob Zuma was the guy that we've talked about years ago when he would have the, and both of them, part of the ANC. Jacob Zuma has been around for a very long time. He's had a long rap sheet, but of course he's never been convicted of anything until he was deposed from power. And now this new guy is coming out of after his, ostensibly is coming after his former rival. But it was Zuma that was doing the kill the white man, kill the Boer rallies, wasn't he? Wasn't that the same guy?
Yes, yes, absolutely. He's also the guy who admitted in court that he raped a certain woman, yes. But he got off because his defense was that in his culture it was acceptable. But he explicitly admitted that he forced himself upon her against her protestations. Wow. He's a wicked man by any standards, and he leads a faction in the African National Congress that is rival to the faction that's now in power. And he was deposed, as you rightly say. He still hasn't been brought to book on any of these charges, the 789 at last count, I think. But the Constitutional Court, which is our apex court, convicted him can't think of the term now, failing to appear before the court,
right,
and sentenced him to a 15-month sentence in jail. And this, of course, in African terms, is beyond unacceptable. You simply do not jail an elder, a man of power and influence. It's not the done thing at all. And the retaliation has been that he has gotten his people, who are enormously powerful because he saturated the entire state with his people, predominantly Zulu people, during his tenure. So the army is effectively more loyal to him than to the current president. The police force is probably more loyal to him than to the current president because they're all his appointees. So he's gotten these, you know, these old national intelligence guys and whoever else to drive this supposedly spontaneous campaign. But it's patent nonsense. You know, there's a meme doing the rounds now in South Africa that goes, "I'm so hungry, I could steal a television."
Yeah, there was a posting on social media. I think I showed it yesterday, and somebody put up a picture of the prison that that Zuma was in, and they said, "Hey, this is where he is. He's not in the shopping malls. Why don't you leave those places alone?" But this really is kind of, as you point out, this is a power play between two rival factions. Well, I talked about it yesterday because they're, you know, the ANC is totally Marxist and communist. I said, really think about it as the competition between Stalin and Trotsky. But I think a better comparison would be what we've seen in Turkey, where you had Fethullah Gulen and the Glenist movement go in and infiltrate the police and the military in a lot of different ways. And Erdogan was very concerned about that. And so there's this big push going between this, but you've got these rival factions and different factions have control of different institutions. Would you say that's what's going on in South Africa between these two Marxists?
Yes, absolutely. And there's a lot at stake, too much for us to go into now, but you're quite familiar with the extent of the state capture, as we call it here in South Africa, of the past 27 years of ANC rule. They prefer to use the term themselves, rule than govern. And under ANC rule, the country has become some sort of a breadbasket for the ruling party. And there are trillions and trillions and trillions involved, for which nobody is ever convicted because the entire African National Congress is in on it. So it's a worthwhile fight. You know, it's worth being dishonest. It's worth being corrupt. It's worth committing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of murders along the way. When you're playing for those sorts of stakes, it doesn't make it right, but it's certainly worth it. And people sometimes, I think, struggle to comprehend that because they look at it through the prism. I'm talking now of foreigners. They look at it through the prism of how things work in the United States or in Europe. And it is true to say that Catherine Austin Fitz and others have exposed, you know, $21 trillion of theft, that MSU team, and much, much beyond that. That's just from the Department of Housing. Yes, it's true, but it's $21 trillion of a much larger pie. In South Africa, the hundreds of billions of dollars that are being stolen by the government are of a far smaller pie. So it's worth the fight to the death that these two factions are engaging in now.
Yeah, yesterday when I talked about it, I said, you know, you look at all the looting that is happening in the shopping centers and the malls and everything else, the devastation. But I said the major looting that is happening is what's going on with these ANC politicians, these Marxists. They're looting the country, as you've talked about in the past, and they're the biggest thieves, and there's no honor between these thieves. They're going to duke it out with each other to be the top dog here. Talk a little bit about the looting. We've mentioned this before, the different things that they want to take over. You've got some bills that are being pushed, always pushing the envelope to try to confiscate more property. In the past, they've confiscated mining and mineral interests to enrich themselves. They've cast their eye lustfully at the farmers, but that's not going to stop them. They're not going to stop until they get everything from everybody. But you guys are the next on the list, aren't you, the farmers?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, at the moment, there's a coalescence of bills before the parliament that is, it's just going to wipe us out completely. The one is a series of laws pertaining to unfairness or equality. And it states explicitly that you may be convicted for treating somebody unfairly, even if you didn't know that you were doing it, and even if they didn't suffer any harm. There's another bill before the parliament which will empower the Minister of Labor and or his delegates at lowest ground level to enter any business at any time and summarily instruct the business owner to change the composition of his workforce, management, and or ownership. And the business may not reopen until that has been done. Now, can you just imagine what that alone will do? The government is also proposing a law now, which is an amendment to the Firearms Control Act, whereby nobody will be permitted to possess a firearm for the purposes of self-defense or hunting or sport shooting, which leaves more or less only, and collecting, by the way, which leaves more or less only vermin control and culling. So people in the suburbs of South Africa will have absolutely no defense whatsoever against criminals. And criminals are going to take license from that. We're also being forewarned that a bill will be passed whereby at local level, in other words, the local alcoholic mayor can determine summarily. And there is the law specifically states that the courts may not get involved. In other words, you cannot go to court to appeal against this. The local authorities of the African National Congress may expropriate your land without compensation. So this is the final iteration, as it were, of this expropriation without compensation bill that has been moving slowly through the system over the past year and a half or so. The latest is that this will be implemented and the courts may not interfere at local level. So I come to you, David, and I say, you've had that farm too long. It's now going to go to my brother-in-law and you can do absolutely nothing about it. Between those four laws and the collapse of our electricity supply grid, which is in a terrible state, mean that businesses and serious working people, taxpayers, are going to be severely hamstrung in the years to come. And the simple reality, whether people like it or not, is that the white people of South Africa will be over by a factor of 10 or 20 the most detrimentally affected. On top of which, is as if all of that wasn't bad enough, we've now been told that we will now receive an NHI, National Health Insurance System, modeled on the British National Health Service, NHS, and that it will be by those who have private medical insurance. So if I have a medical aid scheme, as we call it here in South Africa, my contributions must fund in toto, completely. There will be no contribution by the state or taxpayers at large. A national health insurance for the entire country of approximately 80 million people, as has been revealed recently, in spite of the government's insistence that it's not lying when it says that there are only 59 million citizens. And finally, a bill called Prescribed Assets is now going through the parliament. The Prescribed Assets Bill is one whereby pension funds, all pension funds, must contribute 20% of their assets to government programs, roads, schools, hospitals, whatever the case may be. So this will utterly destroy the white working class, the white middle class, and the white upper class in South Africa. Utterly, 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 there will be nothing left of us. It's purely a matter of mathematics, not doctrine, not sentiment, just arithmetic, really.
Yeah, and as I've been making a note as you've been going through these things, Simon, because you and I spoke a couple of years ago, and you said all the stuff that is happening in South Africa is coming to America as well. And as you started listing these things, like the first thing you mentioned was if somebody, if there's bias, and we call that here, it's called unconscious bias. So there's unconscious bias, even if there's no malice, even if there's no harm, they can penalize you. You have to have equity. You have to have the same results based on demographics, and I'm calling that intersectionality and these other issues. All of these different things that are happening to you right now are now happening to us. We've caught up where you guys are, because it is a globalist agenda. It is the Great Reset. It is about removing all the wealth from the middle class. And of course, in the racial aspects of that, they're casting the middle class here in America as white versus black, just as they're doing even in South Africa. Even to the extent that you're talking about the electrical grid, because as I've been pointing out, we're getting the electrical grid attacked in our country from two different directions, from both supply and demand. Our supply is being choked off because of climate mandates for renewable energy sources, and we've seen how that's worked out in Texas and elsewhere in California. And then on the demand side, they're going to flood the grid. Even as they cut down the supply, they're going to flood it with new demand requirements for electric vehicles. So everything these people are doing is designed to collapse our society, even to the extent of the arbitrary powers of local authorities where there is no due process and protection of law. That's precisely what we've seen here. It's not being done with mayors necessarily, although it is being done by mayors. It's being done by state legislators, but they have to have the flimsy excuse that some public health official, either at the local or state level, has signed off on it, and then they can do anything to take anything from anyone. And that's what we're looking at everywhere.
You know, in mid-2019, I spoke at a conference in the United States, a very small conference, an invitation-only conference, and the gist of my speech was that there would very shortly be a major fractiousness, major violent events in the United States. And afterwards, some people who attended criticized me. They believed that I was exaggerating. And then when the riots broke out last year, I received many, many WhatsApp messages saying, how did you know? How could you tell? How is it possible? You know, you're the cleverest guy in the room kind of thing. And I said to them that you are playing out the same script as we've played out. And yes, it's patently obvious.
Yes.
It's conspicuous. It's there's an Afrikaans expression that we use in South Africa, voor die hand liggend, lit before the hand. So it's right here. You can't possibly miss it. It's not hard to tell the same script is being adhered to. It's not difficult to see the parallels. It doesn't require very much wisdom or genius to observe that we are some sort of a harbinger, some sort of a guinea pig, some sort of a trial run for much of what is happening in the USA. Because statistically speaking, the coincidence is simply not feasible. It's not feasible that there should be so many parallels by some sort of a magnificent accident. And we have a very profound scholar in South Africa called Dr. Anthea Jeffrey, who writes about this, and she tracks it back without much intuition or insight. That's not her what she relies upon. She relies upon document. What does the document say? And she takes it all the way back to the writings of Marx, and she has been forecasting many of the events happening in South Africa for years, and she's never been wrong. This woman is like some sort of a guru, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that she would say to you, look, it's quite unmistakable. If you take it from this piece of behavior back to that statement, back to that document, back to such and such and such and such, then I can tell you that the next thing that they're going to do is X, Y, or Z. It's patently obvious, Mr. Knight, if I may put it that way.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I knew exactly what was happening we're now 487 days of lockdown. But I was talking about this for 2 months before that. I knew exactly what they were going to do because I'd been watching what the climate change people were doing. I knew what their plans were, what they wanted to enact. And I also knew what had happened in China. I knew the history of what is happening with communists, how they run this game. And, of course, what we're seeing in South Africa, they have now, after they've established precedence this last year by establishing this Chinese lockdown, they're now cycling back around and bringing in the climate justification, but they've now added to it all of the racism, quote unquote, justification that has been used in South Africa. So it's very, very clear where they plan to go. It's very clear that this is the same agenda being applied across multiple countries, as we're seeing with the pandemic. All of these different aspects are being applied in all the different countries because it is a global agenda. When we spoke before, you were talking about, again, how this is going to come to America. But we also talked about how you were banding together to try to protect yourself defensively. Talk to us about the current state of preparedness there, your approach to trying to create mutual self-defense, and what that's going to look like if they do something, for example, total gun bans. What is your plan at that point?
Our leader, Mr. Gustav Müller, to whom I've referred before, has made it very clear that the line in the sand is this side of the taking of weapons. If that line is crossed, we will risk with force. The confiscation of firearms shall not be tolerated.
Yes, yes, that is the divine.
However, to answer your question, perhaps in a more, that is absolutely. We are too aware of how Marx has written about this sort of thing, how he has written about who will control all of the wealth in the end times. His letters to his buddy, I can't think of his name for a minute, are explicit about that. We have a solution. Everything will be owned. He doesn't say this literally, obviously, but it's tantamount to the case. Everything will be owned by Google, Apple, Facebook, and Walmart.
Yes.
And therefore, we understand the direction in which we're going. We're conscious of it. So there is an intense endeavor for us to improve our preparations within the confines of the Geneva Conventions, the protocols additional to the Geneva Conventions, legal at all times, bar none. We now have a defense leg of highly, highly, highly trained men led by the soldiers who conducted the war in Angola against Russian advisors, German commanders, Cubans and Angolans and others. That is in active terms, perhaps the fifth or sixth biggest in or on the continent of Africa. We are taking this thing deadly seriously.
Yes.
Our small groups all across South Africa are well prepared. Some of them have realization that if the events of the past few days happen, recur, perhaps a little bit more suddenly and a little bit more severely next time, because we believe that this is a test run. It's in fact has very little to do with the jailing of Jacob Zuma. That next time some of them will not make it out, and they're speaking in very pragmatic terms. People are beginning to recognize the fate that seems to lie ahead of many of us. Many other people are giving up everything and moving down to the region of South Africa, which contains four biblical coordinates found in no other country in the whole world, with no exception, in any language today. We take that as inspiration. Some people are camping in the veld. Some people are erecting little shacks. Some people are erecting nice log cabins. Some people are buying plots of land. Others are buying houses. Others are buying farms. So there is a realistic appreciation amongst our Saitlanders members at the very grassroots level of how severe this thing really is.
Yes.
And once they bring in the seven or eight laws that I described to you a little bit earlier, it will be much more severe too. It will be impracticable to run a business as a white person, and it will be hopeless to attempt to farm as a white person, particularly if your farm is perceived to be prestigious. People are adjusting to the harsh reality of this communist plan described so very well in the African National Congress's documents pertaining to national democratic revolution, in which they talk about colonialism of a special type, which is a concept that was invented by the Soviets specifically and only for South Africa, where the colonizers are both many and well-entrenched, where the colonizer must be utterly dispossessed of everything, and then you strike at him. And last year in June or July, our president said at the annual meeting of the South African Students' Congress that the National Democratic Revolution was now moving into the second phase, the implementation phase, and they, the students, must be ready to participate in that. We know that that means eradication of colonialism of a special type through the means described. And it's going to be, or it is turning out to be, exactly as we thought it would.
You know, striking to me to see how similar the plan for the South African Marxist ANC is to the American Democrat DNC. They are going off of exactly the same script. And we're starting to see some of these types of things happen in the U.S. People are starting to relocate to areas that they feel that people have a commonality with them, a common political view, a redoubt to try to coalesce into various areas. So we start to see a polarization geographically here in the U.S., not to the extent perhaps that you're starting to see it there. But also an understanding, I think people need to understand that the Second Amendment and the ability to have self-defense, and of course you're probably a lot better organized than anybody in America is, but having the weapons, having the organization, and presenting a strong front is a deterrence to these people's acts of aggression. And that's an important thing that people will not really understand, to say that, you know, why do you have to have firearms? As we've heard many times from the DNC here, we have all these superior weapons. We have F-15s, President Biden said. We have nuclear weapons. We've had other candidates like Eric Swalwell and Beto O'Rourke say the same thing when they were running. We can take anything that we want from you with the military weapons that we have. But the reality of all this is, as we're seeing in Afghanistan, as we've seen in every one of these wars since Vietnam, that it turns into a real hellish situation of a civil war. And it is a mutually assured destruction. And so the very fact that you have firearms and small firearms, and the fact that it's going to devolve into an Afghan or an Iraq type of situation, is a deterrent to rational people. But we may not be dealing with rational people at this point in time. So that gets back to the real spiritual issues. Let me ask you, what is the spiritual situation in South Africa? Because here in America, we've pretty much turned our back on God. We've turned our back on our biggest defender here of truth and justice and civility. What is the situation there in South Africa?
It's a bit of a paradox, or certainly a dichotomy. The country is becoming more salacious, if you like, by the day. Godlessness reigns here in every regard. Abortion is just completely out of control. The promotion and advocacy of homosexuality is unbelievable, utterly unbelievable, incomprehensible, really. However, there are many Christian conservatives who are turning back to the old ways, who are abandoning the modern church messages. In fact, I would say that the greatest falling away from the churches is not by people falling away to liberalism, but by people falling away to conservatism. Mm-hmm. I can think of one person I know who attends church. All of us pray together all of the time. We are endeavoring to live some kind of a good life, a Christian life, but not in the halls of the churches who tell us, like the Southern Baptist Convention and the Dutch Reformed people in Michigan have done in the past couple of years in the USA. No, 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 we won't have that. And it's a very good thing, because it strengthens, it creates a sort of a solidarity that I've never experienced in my life in anything, in any endeavor, you know, sporting or business or otherwise, where I'm amongst these people who think like me, and they know that our only hope lies in the Christ. We, you know, you only have to read Marx's writings on Satanism, his famous two satanic poems, and others that hint at it, but the two most famous ones. You only have to read his fourth critique of Hegel, in which he describes why it's so important to destroy the family. It's important to destroy the family, he says, that is to say the earthly family, because the man who's the head of the household sees the holy family represented in his family. He sees the holy family manifest before his eyes, and it strengthens his faith. So it is vital to get the children out of the home into schools that mislead them. It's vital to get the children interested in homosexuality and other things, to which he hints. He hints quite clearly at these things. So that we can destroy God.
Yes.
And as we recognize that more and more, and as we see how this thing corresponds to the National Democratic Revolution, and how the National Democratic Revolution is a Leninist revolution conducted more slowly, there are reasons for that. And we know that it's a communist thing. So too, we are inspired. It's the most wonderful thing, Mr. Knight, to know that you're taking a stand and you can't go back. There's no way to go back, but by the grace of God, you have people to the left of you and you have people to the right of you who think the same way that you do and are willing to lock arms with you and to to go forward into this very, very, very difficult thing. We are being attacked, Saitlander's organization, by our intelligence agencies, our state security agencies, now in ways that are wicked, really, really wicked. It is making our personal lives difficult. It is making our work difficult. But ironically, it increases our resolve. From our leader and founder, Mr. Gustav Müller, downwards, you see it all over the show, this kind of rebirth of Christian conviction in the work that we're doing.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, people have made the comment that America did not create religious liberty. America was created for religious liberty. These types of crises that people go through are really kind of a crucible. You know, we talk about crisis being a danger and an opportunity. We should look at this as Christians as an opportunity. It's going to be a dangerous, difficult time. But out of the other side of this, and I don't know how long it's going to take, I don't know how bad it's going to be, but out of the other side of this, we're going to get something that's going to be better. That needs to be our orientation and our expectation, our confident expectation. That is our hope. And so it's, I want people to hear your perspective, to see what is happening there, because this is a global agenda. The same tactics are being used against you. The same methods are being used against you as are being used against us. And the reason for that is that it's not just a globalist cabal of humans. We're fighting something that is much bigger and higher than that. And that is really what we're up against.
Well, you only have to read Marx's work to know that wasn't an atheist. He was an atheist.
No.
He was an active Satanist devoted to the destruction of the Christ. Yeah. And ultimately, it's like a sort of a pyramid. It all goes back to one sharp point. Ultimately, it's not really about class, and it's not really about capital, and it's not really about the church. It's about the destruction of the Christ, and he writes about it in black and white clearly. And he says that he is going to fight God until he utterly destroys him. And once you recognize this simple truth that lies behind communism, instead of what the sociology lecturers in these blasted universities ram down the throats of our poor children, these misrepresentations of what communism and socialism really is, this thing where they gloss over all of the foundations in mathematics, in engineering, in physics. You can't do it if you gloss over the foundations. You can't skip the basics of the thing and become an engineer or physicist or whatever. But in the humanities, they gloss over the entire foundation and focus just on the roof of the house and tell you how beautiful it's going to be, when in fact the foundation is something else altogether. It is specifically satanic, not because I say so, but because Karl Marx says so repeatedly and explicitly.
Yeah, Saul Alinsky dedicated his book to Lucifer as a free thinker. And of course, just as a political standpoint, you've always had these totalitarian regimes. They see themselves as God. They want godlike powers, and so they want to eradicate anything that is a challenge to them. And they demand that they have control over your thoughts. That is really what totalitarianism is about. That's what George Orwell pointed out with the 2+2=5. That's what you had Alexander Solzhenitsyn pointing out in Live Not by Lies. They demand that you turn over your thinking, that you accept what you know is false and truly believe what is false. That is the essence of totalitarianism, and that is all part of a satanic agenda. And it's not going to start with that, stop with that, as you and I both well know. This is part of a transhumanist agenda. They seek to destroy the human race, not just the family. They seek to alter us, and it's the people who think that they can make an appeasement to this, that they can make a peace with these people, really don't understand where this agenda is going. It is far deeper, far more comprehensive than this, and we have to stand and oppose this. We really do. And we have to stand and oppose it in the strength that we have, which is the strength of Christians. That's far more powerful than anything we're going to have with even our political associations or our AR-15s or anything else. So we have the most powerful weapons as Christians, and that's going to only be the only way that we're going to prevail.
Absolutely. We stand no chance against this thing. And that's why people are coming to these realizations. They're beginning to recognize that we're practically impotent. Yes. Unless we do it in faith. And it's working well for us. People may scoff, they may sneer, they may think whatever they like. But for us, it's working just fine. Thank you very much. And I don't see any other solution working for anybody else. Appeasement is not working.
That's correct.
Cooperation and collaboration, trying to change it from within, is most certainly not working. Complacency, you know, sitting on the sidelines, is not working.
We have to take a stand. We have to take a principled stand. We have to stand with Christ, and that is the bottom line. Tell people a little bit more about your organization. I know that you take donations if people want to help. But tell people about Suitlanders.org.
Thank you very much, Mr. Knight. We are, as I alluded earlier, under tremendous attack. We are imploring people to help us if they can. And the help that we need is not training. We have more than enough training. It's not preparations. We've got it coming out of our ears. It's financial. If people wish to help us, please consider donating. Suitlanders.org, Suitlanders.org. At the bottom of the page, there's a link to a number of various payment channels. There's everything under the sun there to suit everybody's convenience. We need help. We are the world's largest, by a long way, the world's largest civil defense organization constituted under the protocols of the Geneva Conventions, specifically for the purpose of defending our people in a crisis such as we are seeing in the province of KwaZulu-Natal and in Gauteng, in Johannesburg now. We need help. Please help. Go to our website, have a look there, or feel free to contact me if you want to know more. I can chat to you by WhatsApp or by telephone call or by satellite telephone call, you name it. hk@suitlanders.co.za is the address to use. hk@suitlanders.co.za. We're very happy to talk to you.
All right, great. We'll put that in the description of the video. It was great talking to you again, Simon, and we'll be paying attention to what's happening. If we can help, let us know. We'll be happy to let people know what is happening there in South Africa. May God bless you. We're going to be right back, folks. Stay with us.
May God bless you.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
No government, no matter how well-intentioned, can replace the nurturing love of a parent. Yet in the United States, judicial activism and a pending UN treaty are poised to tear apart this most fundamental bond of society. These foreign and domestic threats would undermine the parental role and overrule parental wishes. All parents would have the legal status of an abusive parent, with the state and not the parents deciding what is in the best interest of the child.
The relentless encroachment of judges and UN treaties that assume that government, not parents, has the best interests of the child at heart, will be stopped by nothing short of a constitutional amendment explicitly stating the rights of parents. Decisions affecting the child should be made by those who know and love that child, not by a distant bureaucracy. You can help protect children by helping those who care the most for them and those who care the best for them, the family. Find out.
All right, and that's the commercial. I want to play that again, that short commercial that I did about 12 years ago, because we're not going to talk about parental consent and parental involvement. This has surfaced in Tennessee. I saw this yesterday afternoon. I immediately tweeted it out, and I said, good for Tennessee, because you have the Tennessee Republican Party finally doing something to protect. We've had very few Republicans who have stood up and attacked the real issue. So congratulations to these people for attacking a big issue, and that is the idea that the state, that health officials, that schools are going to vaccinate minors without parental consent. It's another example of the corruption of these institutions that we call schools. They have focused on destroying the soul of our children. If you don't understand that with this LGBT stuff, they've focused on destroying their souls, destroying their bodies. They now demand that not only can they consent to change their gender without the parents knowing it, and for the longest time in many school districts, they've said, well, kids can have abortions without their parents' knowledge. And these decisions should be made by the family. But a part of this, what is really underlying this agenda, this is not about a dispute about vaccines or any of this other stuff. This is fundamentally about destroying the family, destroying the parental unit. You have different spheres of authority. You have the sphere of authority of government. You have the sphere of authority of the family. And you have, and there's various spheres of authority with the government in our system. And by design, to make sure that doesn't happen. But you also have the family, you have the church. That's why we have the separation of church and state by design in our system. That's why you had Jefferson telling the Baptists in Rhode Island that were very concerned that because Jefferson had some unorthodox religious beliefs, his political opponents had said that he was going to impose some religion that was going to be antithetical to their beliefs. They were concerned about that. So the Danbury Baptist wrote him a letter, and he wrote them back saying, there is a wall of separation between me and you. And by that, he meant the Constitution and the First Amendment. It was a wall that walled them into their sphere. Instead, what we have seen in the mid-20th century is the Supreme Court putting a wall around where we can freely practice our religion. And to intrude and to break through the wall of churches, we've seen that in spades now this last year, invading the sovereign area, the separate sphere of authority of churches, invading the separate sphere of authority of families. That is what this is fundamentally about. I've said many times, and I'll say it again, even if I believed that these genetic code injections that were not tested, even if I believed that they were safe and effective, I would refuse to take them if they were going to be coerced. And I would refuse to allow my child to have something that was done without my authority. That is the principle. That is paramount, that we understand that we keep these lines of authority. We keep government in its lane. And so what we see happening in Tennessee, headlines, Tennessee abandons their vaccine outreach to minors, and not just for COVID-19. And good for them. I'll give you the pushback from the mainstream media and Rachel Maddow in just a moment. Tennessee Department of Health will halt all adolescent vaccine outreach, not just for coronavirus, but for all diseases. Why? Because you should not be making medical decisions in a school system. Those decisions need to be made by parents, the people who know them, who love them. They are the ones who are best qualified to make that decision. And let me tell you the decision that you need to make as a parent right now. Get your kids out of these schools. Don't be lulled into a state of passivity, even in Tennessee. Because as we've seen over and over again, these parents, these bureaucrats have openly said they will not abide by these regulations. And why would they? They don't abide by the law. They don't abide by the Constitution or the Bill of Rights that these officials have sworn to uphold. What makes you think that they're going to pay any attention to any new restrictions that are put on them? They're lawless, rebellious. They will do whatever they wish. And they have shown you what they wish to do. It will halt all adolescent vaccine outreach in Tennessee for all diseases amid pressure from Republican state lawmakers, according to an internal report and agency emails obtained by the Tennessean. So this is the original source of it right here, thetennessean.com. The health department will also stop all COVID-19 vaccine events on school property. Good. Good. Stop going after children without their parents' consent. But again, it's the doctrine of in loco parentis. You have abandoned your child to the state. It's a typical attitude these people have had it for decades. They will operate in place of the parents. They will make parental decisions for these kids because it's really their decisions. It's not the kids. The kids are not capable of making these decisions any more than they're capable of making gender decisions or decisions about driving or smoking or having alcohol or guns or any of these other things that we reserve for adults. The health department will take steps to ensure that it no longer sends postcards or other notices reminding teenagers to get their second dose of the coronavirus vaccines. Postcards will be sent to adults, but teens will be excluded from the mailing list so the postcards are not, quote, potentially interpreted as a solicitation to minors. Well, they are soliciting minors. They're soliciting minors to change their gender and everything else. Only 38% of Tennesseans are fully vaccinated, and they're wringing their hands about that. That is something, again, to celebrate. Only 38% of Tennesseans have fallen for this untested, dangerous new approach. A Monday email from the agency chief medical officer, Dr. Tim Jones, he told staff they should not conduct proactive outreach regarding routine vaccines and no outreach whatsoever regarding the HPV vaccine. The HPV vaccine, years ago, when you had Rick Perry as governor in Texas, I was not living in Texas at the time, but it made a national issue. He had the idea that he would require HPV for all students as a condition of going to school here in Texas. Now, that was unprecedented. That was before we had the vaccine mandates for MMR that started rolling across the nation in 2019, where President Trump supported. Remember that? Yeah, they got to get the shots. Son of a gun. But before that, we had Rick Perry, who was also in the Trump administration. The guy that he put him in charge of the Department of Energy. That was when Rick Perry was running for president, of course. He said he wanted to get rid of three federal departments, and he mentioned two of them, and he couldn't remember the third one. And he goes, what was it? And somebody, the Department of Energy. And he goes, oh, yeah, that one. Well, you know, he forgot the department that he's going to get rid of the Department of Energy, and he forgot he was going to get rid of the Department of Energy when he was head of the Department of Energy. You know, we had Howard Phillips when he was put in as head of a department under Ronald Reagan, the only person to ever get rid of the department that he was put ahead of, and he did it deliberately. He said, there's no federal authority for this, and I'm shutting this thing down. We've never seen anybody else do that, and certainly did not see Rick Perry do it. But Rick Perry was trying to push the HPV vaccine as a mandate, and he had a staff member who had close ties to the company that was making the HPV vaccine at the time. I think it was the Merck vaccine. There was also an HPV vaccine that was made by Slowey when he was at GlaxoSmithKline, but I think it was the Merck vaccine that was the one that was the big seller. And so that's been around for a long time. The HPV vaccine has been one that has been pushed on kids, mandated on kids before we had the MMR, and now they're coming along with another one, and we've got to stop this. We can, even after the government sets a precedent, we can set a precedent in the opposite direction. So they are now shutting this down. And so real quickly before we break, for the listeners who are listening on aftermath.fm, I know we stop at the top of the clock. The person who was fired, Dr. Michelle Fiscus, was summarily fired because she was pushing the idea that they were going to do this without the parental consent. She said specifically, it was my job to provide evidence-based education of vaccine access so that Tennesseans could protect themselves against COVID. And in response, you have idiots like Rachel Maddow saying, well, I guess now they're going to, the Republicans are now supporting polio and everything else. No, this is about the quote-unquote mature minor doctrine, which says that children 15 years or older can consent to medical treatment. Sorry, wrong. We're not going to go with that. You're not going to shut down our families. You're not going to take away informed consent. And there is no informed consent for minors, not for these vaccines. And not for your LGBT transgender agenda. We're going to stop this. And I hope that this is not the last one of these moves. We need to get behind this, and we need to put pressure on other Republican legislatures to do exactly the same thing. Leading the way in Tennessee. Good for them. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for joining us. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.